The following is a presentation of the Shining Wizards Network, broadcasting live on rantiumradio.com and available on all podcast platforms and at shiningwizards.com. Follow us on social media at Wizards Podcast. Check out our merchandise at merch.shiningwizards.com. Do your Amazon shopping at amazon.shiningwizards.com and become a Patreon supporter at patreon.com/wizardspodcast. As always, we thank you for your continued support. And now, enjoy the show.
All right, we are live. Kate, what's going on?
Just living the dream. How are you, buddy?
Oh, I'm fantastic.
What's going on in your world? Happy Valentine's Day.
Oh, likewise, Kate. Likewise. Strong same to you.
What a better way to spend it. Talk about wrestling.
Talk about some wrestling, man. That's what I do every Valentine's Day, I feel like.
What do we love more than that? Absolutely nothing.
That's a good point. When you love something, you talk about it 365, 24/7, especially on a day. You're wearing red too, which I just noticed.
I know I am. I do have a fun little dinner after. So
there you go.
I got all festive. I'm ready to roll.
Beautiful, beautiful, beautiful. Let's see what time we got. What time we got, guys? If you're joining us now, I don't know if we're on the rants. I honestly don't, but we are live on all of our social media platforms, Twitch, YouTube. Facebook, Twitter. If you are listening on the rant, if you are on the rant, come on over to the social media. Drop some comments in the old chatsky, and we'll definitely pull them up and read them. Couple guests coming up on the show tonight: Sam Adonis,
hell
around
yeah,
7:30. You may know him as Rudo in the NWA, and we have Zeke Mercer, independent talent, coming out of, I believe, the Pittsburgh area, which we'll introduce you all to. So I'm really excited about that. Love when we get a chance to, you know, exploit's the wrong word. What's the word I'm looking for? Expose is the wrong word. What's the word I'm looking for? Expose is a word.
Give your platform to? Is that what you're trying to say?
Yeah, I'm trying to say introduce, thrust him out into, see, thrust is an awful word too.
Man, so. You are... Valentine's Day is bringing something out in you, my friend.
Yeah. This ain't a great soft open. But we're going to go...
It's not going to be a soft open if you catch my drift.
All right, KTG. All right, so I'm going to do the intro proper real quick in about, a couple minutes. Yeah, actually, no, I'll do it right now. So we'll do the intro proper. Thanks for joining us. Of course, follow us on social media at Wizards Podcast on all social media platforms. I promise I will post on Instagram again. I don't really post on Twitter anymore either, to be honest with you. It's weird. Unless I'm drinking, watching wrestling.
I can always tell when it's you versus Matt. It's hilarious.
Well, because I say it's Kevin.
But even before I see KG, I'm it's a pun or very positive. It's you. With Matt, it's very clearly in the storyline. It's amazing. I love it so much.
I'm going to beat you for your belt if you bring it to a wrestling show.
He did not. We'll talk about our live AEW experience in AC.
I can't wait to get into all of that. It's going to be fantastic. Lots to talk about our two guests. Lots of Forbidden Door talk. Whether or not you actually want to call it the Forbidden Door, who knows?
And talk about Forbidden Doors.
We're going to be the Shining Wizards Forbidden Door podcast from now on.
We kind of did. We opened up the Forbidden Door by having me sit in today.
That's true. Kate from Fight Club will give her the proper introductions. That's right. Mark Order. Shining Network, Shining Wizards Network vehicle, the Mark Order podcast, every Wednesday or Thursday night if they're out having their shenanigans at a live AEW show. All right, so what we're going to do now is, I guess I'll pause. I don't know how this works. I don't think I need to, but for the sake of the stuff that's going to be dropped in post, we'll pause for a second. I'll come right back with the Harden Show. This is the Shining Wizards Wrestling Podcast. We shall be RB. And welcome, everyone, to episode 573. What does it say in the headline? 572? Wow. This is like the one thing I wanted to have ready, and I totally forgot. Anyway, we're well into the 500s, approaching episode 600 of the Shining Wizards Wrestling Podcast, where it's wrestling talk.
And talk about forbidden doors and wrestling.
That's right. We are now a forbidden door and wrestling podcast. This is a special Valentine's Day edition of the Shining Wizards Wrestling Podcast, a non-traditional show, because we have two very non-traditional hosts. I am Kevin KJG, and I am joined by the one and only Fightful.com's only. You can catch her every Tuesday night, and she'll plug all of her stuff. Kate Hensler is here, Kate of Podcast, KTG, Kate the Great. Kate, how the hell are you?
I am doing so well. It's such a fun time to be like a wrestling fan in general, but especially of AEW, because they just have been in the Northeast so much in the past 6 months that like we got to do that whole situation live. And doing well outside of that, working on some shoot job stuff, working on some fun stuff as well.
You and your shoot job.
Look,
I hate that term, shoot job.
I love that you hate that term because you abuse wrestling lingo in so many other
ways. All right, that's not true at all.
Yes, it is.
I try, the longer I've been doing this.
Oh, I'm going to catch you for this.
The longer I've been doing this podcast with Matt and Tony, and of course, every time you fill in, which is always a joy, I try to distance myself from like the smart wrestling talk as much as I possibly can, because I hate it so much when I see other people do it. Now you, to your credit, you're in the game now. You're wrestling media now. You have it. I will give you that right. A wrestler can do it. A promoter can do it. Someone who's on the fringe, I'll give you the pass, the benefit of the doubt, if you will. But if I see someone like me, like just a wrestling podcast guy, and I use the term shoot job, I get crucified.
Well, I don't love it. I don't hate it. The only thing that I don't like is when people call themselves heels online and you're just being an asshole. Like,
oh, yeah.
That's the one that bugs me the most, because I'm like, but you are just being a dick because you're not actually in wrestling. Like, stop calling yourself a heel.
Yeah, you're not a heel. All
right? I do it jokingly.
No. All right, see, that's the thing that I like and respect about you, is because if we do, say I do use something or send a tweet out saying like heel, like, or like the term heater or something, like, it's, people know that it's, I'm not really being serious. And I think people feel the same way about what, when you do it, because you're Kate the Great and all of your tweets are funny. So,
well,
like, why wouldn't the one that uses the inside wrestling terminology not also be taken with either a grain of salt or with a big belly laugh, because that's what they were designed to be in the first place.
Exactly. Like, when I say I'm a heel, I'm complaining about pop punk. I'm not like being an asshole to people. Like, yeah. not in like a real way. You know what I mean?
Because at the end of the day, we're still fans. So
that's
like
when
our fandom comes out, like, we're just like every other fan, where sometimes maybe we will say something that would get us heat with someone who actually does it for a living or something like that. But that's like every other fan in the world. So I guess, in this last 2 minute open, you have kind of turned me on the usage of those terms. You're because welcome. What makes me different than any other fan watching AEW Dynamite, AEW Rampage, NXT, MLW, NWA, Impact, which we will talk about every single one of those things, including our guests. We'll be joined by 7:30 Sam Adonis, AKA Rudo and NWA, and independent talent Zeke Mercer, who we like to expose and thrust and exploit. couldn't think of the word. But Kate, getting back to your original point about AEW, it's a great thing that you brought up, because I think it's an excellent jumping point that I wasn't even thinking about, is for a company that bases themselves out of Jacksonville, Florida, they spend a whole lot of time in the Northeast from DC all the way up to Boston. And they're already going back. You were at the new arena show in Long Island?
I've been to 5 AEW shows in like the past 6 months or whatever. 2 in Newark. I did Arthur Ashe, I did Long Island, and I did Atlantic City.
Yes.
So yeah, I mean we've just been just eating them up because I feel like AEW is intent on giving their live audience like at least one big moment to go home with. Like it's wild and we've just gotten so spoiled. I tweeted it the other day because I just couldn't believe it. Like, in addition to the fact that I get to see like I started watching in 09. So like I get to see Sting, I get to see Tony Schiavone, like people I haven't seen before. Like, and obviously Punk. But like
Your best friend, Punk.
my best friend CM Punk.
That's right.
That's a great example of me just like being an asshole about things.
No, but see, it's not an asshole though. Like that's where like I
It's
disagree.
not, yeah, like being trying to be the anti-asshole about stuff like that.
Do you
But
really
like,
hate MJF?
kayfabe,
Okay.
bro. I
Oh, well,
love
sorry.
MJF.
Oh, see,
He's
there we
great.
go. Kayfabe.
That's
Kayfabe.
why I'm always like, I just like shit on his cat all the time. No, I think he's one of the most refreshing characters in wrestling. And I think of the four pillars, he's like the biggest pillar that they have.
Yeah, I agree.
But with AEW, it's nuts. Like I was thinking about. I saw Danielson and Kenny. I saw Jurassic Express go over. I saw the debut of Keith Lee. Like all of these moments, it's
I
been
was just gonna
so
ask
long.
you if I was just going to ask you if you could rattle off what your moments were for every show that you went to. Now I'm trying to think back to the one that we went to in Newark, and I'm trying to remember if there was a, because we, I think I went to two.
You did. The second one was
Nothing, right?
Daniel. No, well, we had Danielson and Hangman too, which
Oh,
was
that's right. That's right. That's right.
ridiculous. And then we saw Jurassic Express go over there. The first one was kind of setting up Arthur Ashe, but I don't think there was like a moment, but we saw Kenny and Danielson officially get set up. Like the promo happened at that one. We saw Jade Cargill get crowned too as the first TBS title
That's right.
holder.
That's right. That's a big deal.
And that was just one show. Like all three of those moments came at one show in Newark. I saw Keith Lee and Switchblade. That was obviously awesome this last time around. Long Island wasn't like, I don't think there was a huge moment that happened, but it was just so fun to watch CM Punk like cut a 10-minute promo on the Islanders. That was really funny. And it was like an MJF homecoming.
I'm a sucker
What
for a good
else?
hockey incorporation in a wrestling promo.
Hell yeah. And what was so one thing I like about AEW is when they're in people's hometowns, they're like, if you're a heel, you get to be a face for a week. Like they don't think that's gonna be the end of the world. So MJF was hugely over. And so for that week, we got to see CM Punk cut like a heel promo, and the fact that it was just like mostly about the Islanders was hilarious. It was so much fun.
And I think today, if I'm not mistaken, they just announced that they'll be back there in May.
In May, 3 days before my birthday, so
Uh-oh. Okay, so KTG, are you getting tickets? You already going?
I have to like seriously consider it because I've gotten COVID 3 times, so I also am very,
Yeah.
very aware of that. But like at the same time, that's also going to be the Owen Hart tournament. I don't know if it's kicking off, but they did announce that like it's either kicking off or there's going to be rounds of it there. So,
I believe that they weren't really specific with the graphic that they showed, but I would imagine if it's what that's the second week in May. Did they say they're going back May 11th?
May
Did I read
11th,
that right?
yeah.
So that would be probably the second Wednesday of the month. So one would think that maybe they would start it on the first Wednesday, but I don't remember seeing another graphic with the Owen Hart stuff on it. So maybe someone in the chat can smarten me up.
I think originally what they were trying to do was make sure that they were going to be able to be in Canada when it started or concluded.
Right.
So, I think it's more to do with that a little bit, but like I don't know where this falls in that because travel restrictions are what they are, but
Right.
I think that tournament's gonna be awesome. I'm excited about that.
Yeah, and in the chat, SCW, the wrestling channel, says AEW, is the company that keeps on giving right now. Excitement, consistent booking, and a real fun factor. AEW makes you excited to see their shows each and every week, and I 100% agree with that.
Yeah. And
I mean, you're going to have your flaws in booking all the time,
of
so
course.
I'm not going to paint them with the ridiculous brush of not being consistent when, listen, nobody's perfect. But I think for the most part, it's literally the favorite, my favorite part of the week when it comes to wrestling is watching AEW now, when it used to be like Impact. And I still enjoy Impact, but AEW to me is the standard bearer right now.
Impact is on a hell of a run right now, too. I saw the Josh Alexander news break, though, that he's a free agent. So that, I think, is going to be tough for them because I can't imagine he won't.
I did not see that.
That was just a couple hours ago. I think Sean hit it. But him being a free agent and not booked for their next pay-per-view is a little bit suspect, especially when AEW name-dropped him. And Ethan Page is obviously over there, and there is a big love for tag team wrestling in AEW.
But you can't split up the men of the year on me, can you?
Dan Lambert, so that's an entirely different ball game for you than it is for me.
I could deal with the men of the year with or without Dan Lambert.
Okay, I would prefer I like them without.
Right, I agree. 100% agree. I like Dan Lambert as a character. Now, would I want him with them? No, because Ethan Page is one of the best talkers in the world.
And that's my biggest thing with Lambert, is he keeps getting strapped to guys that can talk for themselves. I'm like, this is wasted.
Yeah, and now I don't know what his deal with, I know he was out there, and we'll get to Dynamite, I guess, chronologically, but he was his linkage to Lance Archer, which I get because I don't know enough about Lance Archer, but he's already got Jake Roberts.
I'm wondering if they want to keep a manager there, and Jake's health has been a little bit like suspect, where he's been on TV and off of it, but like also Lance Archer is a decent enough promo that I don't think he needs it, and Dan Lambert's just such a weird one, like that makes no sense to me at all.
It's like, I feel like a lot of people, he's an acquired taste. I really do enjoy his promos when it's in the right environment or the right place at the right time. He had some weird moments of stuff with Brandy. It was kind of awkward, but good. But he had a line that was a little weird. I can't remember what it was, but.
Well, they called her a whore.
Okay. Well, yeah. Well, that'll do it. That'll do it.
Love that.
Happy Valentine's Day, Brandy.
I get it. It's Diet Cornette. I understand. I just don't love it.
I think he's better than Cornette. As a bad guy, and not, I'm not talking like podcast Cornette. I'm talking like wrestling personality Cornette, like in his meanness and his crudeness and his just aggressiveness. I think he's better than Cornette.
Dude, come on. He's like Wish brand Cornette. He's not better than the guy
who
incarnated it.
All right, Cornette is top three, top four greatest of all time.
And you're putting Dan Lambert above that?
I think when Cornette's I'm talking about just his strict. All right. Dan Lambert's better at being an asshole than Cornette. Cornette is a good, evil manager. But when Dan Lambert wants to talk some trash, he'll talk some trash. And I know Cornette now talks probably more trash than anybody in the world. Like, I put Dan Lambert, like, I know the combination has played itself. The comparison has played itself to death. But when Paul Heyman wants to be I don't think Cornette ever was able to be like a true, like, because he got out of the mainstream spot. He's never able to be a dick as a manager. Like, hey, like, call Brandy a whore, or like Cornette never did that, did he?
Went racial.
I went racial.
No, he did.
Cornette. Oh god! I thought, where did I slip? I thought I slipped with something.
No, you're fine. No, I think
this could be a hot take that everyone's going to shit on, but I think as a complete douche character, Lambert's better than Cornette.
I feel like there's a pointer count there with someone that, like, you should like actually go back and go side by side and compare, because I'm genuinely intrigued, because I've seen Cornette's stuff, but again, like, never watched a real time or anything. Like, I'm very intrigued to see. Because we're also, like, we can talk about who's better, but, like, such different times, such different contexts. Like, I'm intrigued. Yeah,
that's a great point. You have a lot more freedom to say stuff, like, and personal attacks are more common now than they were back then, when you would just talk about, you know, your moveset in a promo, or like maybe you had the occasional Jim Cornette with like the British Bulldog with Shawn Michaels and British Bulldog's wife. You had a little bit of that, maybe a little bit of stuff with Sonny.
Well, I think like, because it's not protected, there's things you can get away with. You know what I mean? Like everybody knows it's not real now. So it's almost like people can do it. It's a little bit easier to get away with some stuff when it's a wink and a nod.
Yeah. And it might be, and because you can get away with so much stuff now, I guess that kind of takes a little bit of the art out of it.
Yeah.
Because I can just call you like a piece of shit and it'll pop the crowd, or I can, you know, say you do this in your spare time and the crowd will go, ooh. Whereas like, then you tried to keep it to what was being aired on the television show. So in that respect,
you had to be more clever, I think. Now you can just throw shit out there. You know what I mean?
Yeah, because 9 times out of 10, the AEW, specifically the AEW fan base, is going to know what you're talking about. Even when, I hate this term still, because I feel like the internet wrestling community term is, there's no longer an internet wrestling community. The internet wrestling community is the community. Like, that's it. Like, I think the majority of the people are the smart fans now, as opposed to the casual fans. Like that's what I think. I think especially when it comes to AEW, like people say, like when you listen to like a Bruce Pritchard podcast or you listen to like a Jim Ross podcast and they mention the internet wrestling community is that small majority. Yeah, maybe in 1998 or 1999, but I feel like in 2022, the internet wrestling community is the community. That's it. That's who's watching.
It's at least a strong enough sample size that you're able to like extrapolate what the rest of the community is thinking. And I think the best indicator of that is the pandemic, when there were no fans in arenas to give you ideas. Look at what AEW did versus what WWE did. Like, WWE bottomed out on ratings, and you know, I think Royal Rumble was really indicative of the fact that they haven't created any new stars outside of Roman, because nobody was really getting pops, where AEW made their star and Adam Page. So I think it's,
how do you feel like, about Adam
there's
Page?
Still something to listen to. I think Adam Page is great. I think they have dropped the ball on getting him in a program that means something, but I think they're coming back with that. I think Adam Page versus Adam Cole is going to be great, but it was like, they just didn't have anything lined up behind Danielson. Like, the Danielson stuff was so great, and then it kind of fell off a cliff. But this whole pay-per-view in general, they just got, like, the biggest story happening right now is Punk and MJF, and that's not for a title. They didn't have any title feud set up until, like, Rampage of last week, I think. Like, the Open Challenge titles are your mid-tier titles, but you should at least have a story going into a pay-per-view. And then there wasn't really anything for Britt, and there wasn't anything for Paige, and it was like, their pay-per-view is like in a month, you know? So they kind of like have snapped some stuff together, but I was like, you got to be careful of. Like, you can't lose story, because that's what got you Adam Page in the first place. And now, just because you have Punk and Danielson and whatever, you can't just rely on that.
And Punk has
the best story of the company. So.
Yeah, he really does. And it's just weird. Like, do you ever get like, I have no like evidence or proof. It's just like how you feel when you see somebody on your TV. Like, I used to feel like, and the live crowd there has a lot to do with it, but like when I saw like Paige, even though the match with Archer was crazy, but like, I'm just like, I don't feel the same way about Hangman that I did like a month ago or like two months ago. So it's just very weird. And I'm not saying I won't get that feeling back, but I'm just like, I don't know. Like, I don't know what it is. I can't put my finger on it. While I do still like him, and I still do like what they're doing with him, it's something weird that's like not explainable. It's just something there. It's like, oh, all right, there's Hangman Adam Page, and all right.
I think you can trace some of it back to the fact that, and this is why I don't think he's dropping to Cole, but I don't think he's going to be a super long title reign. There was so much magic in the chase for that story. That it's like, and now he has it, and then what? Like, it's tricky to follow that. And then you had Danielson, and you're like, okay, and then what? It's like, well, what do you even do now to satiate my thirst as a fan? Like, that's actually a tricky creative thing that I think they haven't figured out. But they do this sometimes, and it's a thing that I hope they get better at, of I knew Archer wasn't going to win. And with right. Britt, her whole title reign, it's been like, I know it's going to be Thunder Rosa. So now the match itself with Archer was great, and he got reactions that I hoped he was getting. But it's like, if I know the outcome, you have to make the story that's getting there real damn good. And they have fallen off in that regard, in my opinion. So,
right.
like, if I know the inevitable outcome, that's fine, but it has to be really good then. Like, you have to give me something really, really good.
And I think I made this point a while ago, and I believe, if I remember correctly, you agreed with it, and I think it goes to what you just said, is that AEW for a long time has been really good at presenting those interim storylines that could headline a Dynamite as opposed to a pay-per-view, where they build up, like, an Archer, or whether it was, you know, Daniel Bryan. I mean, that wasn't a pay-per-view. Those were two Dynamites, right? One Dynamite. Paige and Danielson, right? Are you frozen? Uh-oh. I think Kate's frozen. All right. So anyway, my point was that that AEW did an extremely good job of making you want to watch Dynamites. Are you back?
Yeah, sorry. I froze up there for a second.
No problem. So I don't know if you heard what I said about how I thought
that, up for Dynamites.
Yeah, like having good like interim storylines for your TV show to buy time to your pay-per-views where you really give the fans like their big time main event. And I feel like they were doing a good job, but to your point about this, like, you know, Lance Archer is not going to beat Paige, so it's kind of fallen off a little bit in that regard, I feel like.
Yeah, and I think it's kind of tricky because you have to balance that against something that I think is definitely one of their strengths, which is that they have these background stories running. Like, you right. know Kenny's going to come back at some point, and if it's not for the title, if it's to be on his side, whatever, you know that if CM Punk wins that title, or the second, not even the title, the second CM Punk turns heel, you don't think Eddie Kingston's coming back to say, I told all you motherfuckers exactly who this guy was, and they're not going to have a rematch on that? Of course they are.
Yeah.
So it's like, to be able to fill in the gap with meaningful stuff is tricky, but like, the title has to be paramount above everything, right?
So agreed.
That's tricky. I think the magic is going to be with Miro. I think you're going to get
really.
I think you're going to get an awesome Adam Page and Miro program once he's back and healthy.
Is he hurt? He's
been hurt. He was fighting a leg injury, and I think it's one of those nagging things. So okay. He went away to like heal up. I think when he comes back, that program is going to get this like a little bit more back on track. And I think whatever's going to happen with Cole and Paige is going to be incredible too. I don't know if he drops to Miro. He's certainly a viable option.
All right.
But I think they're going to put together a few there. That's just going to be absolutely incredible.
I love the Redeemer aspect of Miro, and I want to get back to a point real quick about the chase. Everyone always says, well, what is the big cliche when you're critiquing wrestling?
The magic is in the chase.
The magic is in the chase. Okay, that might be true, but you know, the chase has to end at some point. So it's like, what are you going to do now? Like,
yes.
the chase is great, and the chase is probably what brings people in, but to keep them, there has to be like a second season. Like, there has to be another show. Like, okay, Rachel and Ross got together, right? Ross chased to happen. And now what are you giving me with this Ross-Rachel relationship now? Like, you got to give me something here.
Well, a lot of rematches with the two of them, but...
50-50 booking with Ross and Rachel.
To me, the bigger thing was, like, you built this incredible program with Danielson right on the heels of it, right? So, I felt like that made Paige feel as much of a star as the title did. And then they kind of didn't do anything with all the momentum going out of it. Like, you beat Bryan Danielson, like, regarded as the best wrestler in the world right now, actively, definitely on American television.
Sorry. Go ahead.
No, that's okay. You can pull that up if you
want. No, I already had that one.
Gotcha.
This is
so
what
it's just like, and I can't, it's, there's so many things to balance, right? Like, do y'all love wrestling? Also, hear me out. Dan Lambert is Hangman's mouthpiece. No.
Yeah. I just wanted to pull this up for you.
No. Lambert has to be a heel, and Hangman is such a pure baby face. I don't think you touch that part of him. Like, he's definitely that.
Here you go, Kate. What about this? Marking Out, our good friends over at the Marking Out podcast.
Oh, yeah.
Wasn't it reported that Miro has been healthy for weeks, but there's no creative for him? I don't know. See, the Marking Out guys are awesome, but I can, they're very much like me with their sense of humor. So I don't know if that's like a shot at like Vince McMahon for not being able to use Rusev well, or if that's actually serious and there really is no creative.
No, I think he might be back, but like I kind of get it because like you just had Keith Lee. Oh my God! Now that we're saying that out loud, a Keith Lee versus Miro program. Jesus. Yeah,
I wanted to transition into that too.
Yeah, I think like I don't know if it's that creative doesn't have anything for him as much as if he is healthy, maybe creative doesn't have something for him just yet. Like I think he was like extremely over and on such a heater. I think you want him to come back in a program that feels important right away. And also, like, they love coming back to these things. It's not my favorite, but Kip Sabian's been out there with a box over his head looking for a story to re-enter to. Like, I don't know if they're going to rewrite that or whatever, but, like, I don't think it's, like, that they don't have anything for Miro. I think it's that when he comes back, it's going to be something important and big and long term, and you know, we're getting Andrade versus Sammy. I could see Miro versus Sammy. There's so many options for him because he's such an important guy and he's a heel. Like right now you just happen to have like two titles that have baby faces with them. Punk is a face. Outside of Danielson, you have Cole as a heel, and then probably Miro's like the next most important one. Keith Lee just debuted. He's a patented babyface. You could sell me a ticket to Keith Lee versus Miro any day of the week.
Yeah. I feel
my
like,
goodness.
Yeah, I feel like there's a lot of people that would feel the way that you do. And I always like to play this game. Whenever like a new champion is crowned, I always like to play the game. Like who's gonna be the one to take it off them?
It's time to play the game.
Yeah. In the game, AEW. Who Keith Lee, so like who's gonna be the one to take it off Paige again? To me, like not again, but to take it off Paige. And to me, I just feel I can't even think straight because like it's gonna have to be a really long reign for someone like Punk or someone like MJF. Paige has got to hold his belt for a little while now. He's got to hold it till at least like past this. When Revolution's the next show, right?
Yeah, I think Double or Nothing might be the place where he drops it because that's kind of like his pay per view or whatever. Anyway, you know, I one of my friends at Fight Club, or formerly at Fight Club, Joe Holbert, came up with this really good booking that I'm.
What happened to Joe Holbert at Fight Club?
He's just focused on Late Night Grin now, which is awesome, awesome podcast. He has a really, really great wrestling mind, but like some of his fantasy booking is the coolest shit I've ever heard. And I popped huge for this idea because I'm a punk mark, but that you have a Adam Page, obviously pure babyface, facing CM Punk as a pure baby face, and the Punk heel turn comes with him like low blowing someone or like low blowing Paige, and turning heel in a moment instead of like gradually. Cause I think that is something that needs to happen with Punk, with where he's at with this kind of like happy go lucky thing. It needs to like get you and catch you off guard. And it was his idea to have then Eddie Kingston come back, reignite that and say, I told all you motherfuckers who this guy is, and he just low blowed your baby champion. And I just thought that was such a good booking and could kind of justify a shorter Punk run. I mean, he's in his 40s, like, and I don't think he's going to be one of these guys that drags out to his 60s because he's not a part-timer. He is wrestling most weeks. But I thought like, it's hard for me to put my markdom aside for a guy like Punk because he's my dude. But, like, I just thought from a booking perspective, if you use that as the way to turn Punk heel, man, like, there's so many good things that happen with that. Like, I think, you know, Paige comes out of that so protected. You reignite Eddie and Punk too. You could have Danielson turn face off of that and have that, which has, you know, been in people's dreams for years. Like, there's so many things that could lead to. And we haven't really had a title reign. I guess you could make the argument that Kenny did this, but like, he, because he was so banged up, I feel like wasn't defending as much. Like, we haven't had a title reign that went through and made a bunch of new guys yet, I don't think. Like, it's been a lot of like Moxley and Omega and like people that are kind of already at that level. I think a Punk one, man, you could just light up Punk and Starks or whatever. Like, there's so many things that he could do with that title that I don't think we've seen happen yet, because so much of it was about like establishing Paige and just like using the top people that you have. So I think that could be really healthy for what it could do in terms of AEW, and you want to do it while he's in his early 40s rather than his late 40s, I think.
Yeah.
So I loved that booking. I don't know. Like, Keith Lee's got to be a face for a while. I don't think you turn him heel. I don't think he's the guy to take it off Paige. You could just have Cole do it. Like, I don't think that that's the best move, because I think Paige, after such a long story going into it, deserves a couple more months.
Right.
But I mean, a lot of people think it's going to be MJF, which is totally fair. But I think MJF, you're going to want that guy to have like a year long reign.
That's right. And real quick, our first guest of the night is in the queue, but real quick, I just want to ask this question because I have the memory of her fruit fly and I'll forget it. So, Kate, do you think we live in a world where Eddie Kingston will ever be AEW champion?
I do. I think a transitional one. I think he's such a good, he's such an easy guy to put it on and take off. Like, it's going to happen, but I think it'll be 2-3 months.
All right. Well, I am going to add our guest into the stream. He is here right now. Let's bring him on. Ladies and gentlemen, joining us now, I guess it's not really the Shining Wizards hotline anymore. It's the Shining Wizards stream yard, Sam Adonis of NWA fame, and of course, a lot of other things. Sam, how are you tonight? It's Kevin and Kate. How are you?
I'm doing great. It is Monday night, which is always my night to chill and relax. It always seems to be my podcast night because 9 times out of 10, I'm flying home from somewhere on a Sunday. So I'm here with my dog on the couch talking to you guys. Thank you for having me.
No problem, man. We thank you for taking a few minutes out of your schedule especially on this. Did you get your dog anything for Valentine's Day or what?
Oh, he's spoiled as it is. I mean, he got half my dinner tonight, so I guess that's a Valentine's Day gift.
What was dinner?
I had this turkey. It's a, what do you call it? Ground turkey bowl with rice and cilantro and healthy people stuff, because I was always a big heavy guy. I lost about 150 pounds over the last 10 years, so I got to do my best to stay on top of it. I wish I could have had a nice dinner with my girlfriend, but she's actually sadly in Florida right now, so it's just me and the little guy here on the couch.
That's awesome. Well, we are joined right now by Sam Adonis on social media, all social media platforms, at Real Sam Adonis. Does your dog have a Twitter or Instagram?
Has an Instagram. Star Lord Yukon is his name. All right.
Yukon.
My girlfriend is actually a wrestler from WOW fame. Her name is Ray Lynn. She wrestled as Chantilla Chelly. So we live together and we have our little fur baby. And yes, we treat him like he's an actual child. He's spoiled, but he is the essence of our being. And trust me, there's nothing better than being away for 2 or 3 days, opening that front door and being greeted by a dog. It's just nothing like it.
They're like, oh my God, you're back. Let me tell you everything. Like, they're so exactly. Fun. I love it.
I had dogs growing up, but it was kind of like the family dog. So none of us were actually like, you know, the dog wasn't each individual's. Now this dog is my dog. And he's like, you know, he's so cuddly and wonderful. And just when I'm on the road and I come home, he literally won't leave my side for about 24 hours, which is awesome.
It's the best.
So Sam, let me ask you this now. NWA is now a staple in the world of professional wrestling. What are your thoughts on your time so far with NWA and its future outlook?
I love NWA. And anybody that knows me and knows my story, my dad was an indie promoter.
Yep.
So I grew up around wrestling since I was about 4 or 5 years old, and I have a soft spot in my heart for old school wrestling. And NWA is doing something completely different to everyone else. And, you know, if you're going to compare it to anything as far as, you know, the modern scene or what somebody else is doing, there's a good chance you're not going to like it. But if you understand what wrestling is, what it's supposed to be, and where it came from, you know, you're probably going to love NWA because it's no bullshit. You know, it's not about the storylines. It's not about the you know, crazy moves or angles. It's about wrestling, you know, as an athletic competition, you know, two people in a ring trying to win a match. It's wrestling. So I really like being a part of it. Everybody there is cool. It feels very, very professional. That's the one thing that I really like about it is, you know, a good portion of that locker room was signed to WWE when I had my WWE developmental contract back in 2012. But when you're in WWE, there's a lot of other circumstances that you have to deal with. So, you know, you might not have been best buddies with everyone. Now, you know, coming into that same locker room, you know, 10 years later, seeing the same people, we're all kind of on the same page. You know, a lot of us are still here 10 years later because it's in our blood. It's what we do. It's what we love, you know. But after the experience that, you know, I've had, as well as all the other wrestlers have had, you kind of have that same general mutual respect. And I think it all kind of goes back to the essence of what NWA is. You know, they're not trying to set the internet on fire. They're not trying to get the coolest new young superstar that does the best double moonsault. You know, most of us are kind of on the same page of what wrestling is, what it was, and what's expected of us. And it makes for just a hell of a locker room. Just great talent working together and just, you know, respecting pro wrestling.
When we had Mickey James on, she spoke a lot about what you were initially saying as far as the style of it goes, that it's not like backstages where there just happened to be cameras recording your conversation, that she also loved how raw the approach was, how old school it was. What is the, and maybe it's not as much of a challenge, maybe it's easier, but what was the biggest challenge going from somewhere with production that's in such a specific way like WWE to going back to this like incredibly raw, nothing to hide behind style? Or did you just find it more natural?
I think it's something most of the talent there has had, you know, TV experience, and usually TV experience itself is kind of like, you know, it doesn't stray too far off. There's always going to be a hard camera. There's always going to be 3 or 4 mobile units. You know, they'll tell you the entrance, either the hard cam's to the right of the entrance. There's a lot of that, you know, once you do a XYZ TV taping once, you kind of got the formula. NWA kind of keeps it to that. You know, it's not too far out of that realm. And I think from my personal experience, this, I debuted for NWA a little bit after the pandemic started. So as far as a small, intimate setting with a very little amount of people, I had done a few of those shows before I even came to NWA just because of the COVID restrictions. So it was really a natural fit to me. You know, it was one of those things that I was able to get right in, feel comfortable. And I think at the end of the day, a lot of us are comfortable because, you know, there's a certain respect that we all have for each other. Because I know, you know, Tom Latimer from 2010. I know Tyrus from one, you know, FCW. I know this guy was an Impact. I know this guy from Japan. You know, you all kind of have that, you have that sense of respect, and it does make everything a little bit easier to adapt to. For me personally, I like it a lot because it's almost like a night off, because I've made most of my career in Mexico, and I've spent a lot of time, you know, all over the world representing Mexico and doing the Lucha Libre style, which couldn't be further from what the NWA style is. But in my opinion, you know, I love it because I was taught the basics. You know, I was taught to learn how to be a professional wrestler and do the basics, you know, the holds, the moves, follow the rules the way it was 25 years ago. That's how this, you know, our generation and our locker room was taught. Now wrestling has evolved so much with so many schools, and so many people don't learn the basics. They don't know what it is. I would say there's a good, you know, 30% of every wrestler that, you know, whether they're on TV or not, would come to NWA and maybe make a fool of himself because they can do XYZ sequence and do what they saw somebody, you know, the latest internet trend is, but they never learned the basics, you know. And you can't pull one over on us at the NWA, because when you don't have those basics, you know, you're going to make yourself look like a fool. So it's definitely cool. It's everything about it's just so different. the adapting to it has been nothing to me, just because it's basically old school gritty wrestling. And the way I tell everybody, it's like, my dad has been watching wrestling since 1962. My dad was a promoter through the 90s and the 1000s. You know, he's seen Lou Thesz live and Mil Máscaras live, all these huge stars. And my dad doesn't like professional wrestling today. You know, my brother's on WWE every Monday night. He doesn't care. He doesn't want to watch it. He doesn't like anything on TV. My dad likes NWA because it's, you know, guys that just go out there. They're not insulting your intelligence. They're not trying to make it more complicated than it needs to be. They're not trying to appeal to this, you know, segmented demographic that is the online wrestling market. They're going to say, this is what I like. Maybe you'll like it too. Watch it. And so far, I think it's been pretty awesome.
We are talking with Sam Adonis. Follow him on Twitter and Instagram at Real Sam Adonis. Talking about NWA right now, and a couple things that I've noticed about NWA. I mean, it's pretty obvious what they do there, but some things that I've noticed that I wonder if it's difficult for professional wrestlers to get used to, the fact that there is no entrance music. There is no, you're walking really like a really short distance to the ring. Sometimes I watched Power this past week. Sometimes the team that you're facing comes out right behind you. Like, so how is that something, or how difficult is that to get used to?
I think that would be something that could be difficult for some of the younger guys that are there, some of the students that have literally had, you know, a year or two experience, because a lot of people do like to do their warm-up rituals, you know, and go do 100 squats before their match, and they need that music to hit for them to turn it on. But the majority of the people in the NWA, you have to remember, have been doing this for, you know, 10 to 15 years.
Yeah.
And I mean, even though you see, let's say, for example, an Impact taping, Impact might be taping, you know, in front of 2,000 people, but it's still a 10-hour day. You might have two hours of wrestling in 10-hour days. So most of us, you know, we understand how to do TV wrestling. It's all about just to be in the ring at the right time, you know, do what you're asked. It's a formula that you can't be selfish. You don't have enough time to be selfish. You know, you have to do what they ask you to do, do it very well. And I think it's something that the people there know how to do it, know how to handle it. I personally think that, you know, it would be very unusual for a lot of people. I'm a big believer that TV wrestling and live wrestling are two completely different art forms. You know, you just can't, TV wrestling being live is kind of, to me, a weird hybrid. Because, you know, you just go back through the history. The TV was filmed for TV as a general commercial for the live events. And the performance you see at the live event was, you know, it's completely different to what you saw on television. But, you know, just given what they're doing right now, I think it's something that's, you know, there's a certain crowd that wants that. There's a certain crowd that likes that. Could be hard for some people to get used to. But I think, you know, they're very conservative. And the way they, you know, their business model seems to be laid out, I see them being around for a long time to come.
I'm actually really sorry I had that AEW banner up this entire time. We were
talking. That's all right. I get that rumor out there. You know, someone's talking.
There you go.
AEW confirmed. Sam Adonis.
Yeah, I've been called way worse than AEW star. You know, so why not?
We're gonna sprinkle a couple fan questions in here right now as we talk to Sam Adonis. Here's one, a very you know, kind of basic question, but very interesting at the same time. So Bobby Batito asked Sam Adonis, "Who is your dream opponent in the NWA?" And I guess if you want to expand this to just in general, maybe.
Yeah. In the NWA, there's a lot of them I'd like to work with. I've already worked with Nick Aldis, and he's just unbelievable to work with. I would work him any night of the week. I've worked with Zack Ryder, who's the new champion. I would work with him any night of the week. Honestly, just, you know, given the realm of where we are right now, I'd probably throw Trevor Murdoch in that pool. Trevor Murdoch was trained by Harley Race, and, you know, he's been around 20 years. To me, you know, I'm a lot different than a lot of the other wrestlers because, you know, I look at wrestling completely different since it's been in my blood since I was a kid. I can go to an independent show and see the guy in the third match that nobody looks at, nobody's caring about, nobody really pays any attention to, and I can say, that guy's pretty good. I want to wrestle him. You know what I mean? So I think, you know, there's people out there that, I think Trevor Murdoch is one of these guys that has so much more than meets the eye. A lot of the wrestling fans might not be the biggest Trevor supporters, but the professionals, we all know exactly how damn good he is. And I would love to work with him any chance I can.
So for those people that might not be familiar 100% with you and our audience, you know, you said that you grew up in the business. A lot of people do that end up getting in the business. What is it about that? Do you think if your family wasn't already in the business, you would have fallen in love with it anyway?
I really don't think so. I really don't think that would be the case at all. I always use the analogy that if your parents own a bakery, you probably know how to make a cupcake. You know, the peripherals are right there. You get to see everything around you. You know, my first 4 or 5 years around wrestling, I was terrified to talk to the wrestlers. I was scared, you know?
Yep.
But the one thing about me is I don't remember ever having legit fandom. It was more of a fascination than getting lost in the show. I never had, you know, the favorite wrestler that I wanted to, you know, The Rock needs to win tonight or I'm going to, you know, not be able to sleep. Never had that. I was more worried about what the setup was going to look like at WrestleMania, what color tights Shawn Michaels was going to wear, you know, stuff like that. It was like, I was just fascinated by the whole industry, the presentation, the storytelling. And I think more than anything, it's the crowd communication, you know, the art form behind it, which is completely lost by most people now. You know, we basically have the power to be the most dramatic sporting event you've ever seen if we lay out the circumstances to make it a dramatic sporting event. Now, a lot of people aren't doing dramatic sporting event. They're doing the slam dunk contest. And, you know, you might like the slam dunk contest, but it doesn't give you the same feeling as when you watch Game 7 of the World Series.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's kind of what I've always loved about it. I think what helped me personally was I couldn't do it until I was old enough. And I was just obsessed with helping and being a part of it. My brother was a wrestler, WWE's Corey Graves. So I traveled with him all over the country. My dad would put these shows on and I would literally build the ring because I wanted to. I wanted to sell people's merchandise because I wanted them to like me. You know, what we call paying dues, I did because it meant so much to me because I couldn't be in that ring. Now I think it's paid off so much. I think I have a very, you know, unique perspective on wrestling because of all this and what I've been through. But, you know, I think learning and being around it, not being able to get it, led me to study and want to learn more and just learn more and learn more. And I think I have a very competitive edge because I almost have more experience as a office guy or a booker and a, you know, behind the scenes guy than I do an actual wrestler. I learned the ins and outs of the wrestling business before I ever laced up a pair of boots. That's why I've been able to, you know, have success in major companies all over the world, because I don't wrestle for me. I wrestle for the company and what they ask me to do. You know, and I put myself, I've been able to stay in work because it's all about just, you know, having the perspective of wrestler and promoter and balancing the two.
You mentioned crowd communication as being something that you were fascinated by and a wildly underestimated thing. I want to get into your AAA run because it was so successful, but between Mexico and America and Japan, how is the crowd communication different in all of those different companies and countries and experiences?
I think you have to understand the culture in order to get over in the country. And I think that's what a lot of people don't look at. The thing is, if my number one passion on earth is professional wrestling, number two is probably horror movies, number three is world culture. I am fascinated about what makes people tick worldwide and why it is that way. So it's a, you know, you need to just understand what it is they like, why they like it. I think that's a big problem that's, you know, led us down the wrong path, you know, as in wrestling as a whole. The perception of Japanese wrestling from an American fan is completely different to the perception of Japanese wrestling to a Japanese fan. So there's guys, you know, that we could watch a show in Mexico or Japan and say, wow, I love that guy. And in Mexico, he might just not be the guy getting over. Yes, he may do cool things, but he's leaving something out because he's not living in his moment culturally. He's doing what, you know, what the wrestling industry. And that's what I think what's right now, you know, we're in a very dangerous spot because everybody wrestles for the internet. Everybody wants that little 30-second clip, you know, that might not get over. Those 30-second clips, the fans could be sitting on their hands for that 30-second clip. They might not even enjoy that clip. But then the internet blows it up and makes it a bigger deal. There's very few people out there that can adapt their style to every single crowd out there. Very few people. And I say this all the time. I've perfected the fact that the art of being an American wrestler in another country. Because like I said, you, the perspective of another fan, a fan in Japan, they have an idea of what an American wrestler is. So when you go in there as an American wrestler and you don't play to that expectation, when you kind of throw it against them and start, you know, if I say this all the time, when guys go to Japan and they try to be Kenta Kobashi or Jun Akiyama, they're trying to be someone they're not, and people see through that. But when you come over and just be you, do American wrestling, do the punches, the kicks, you know, a few submissions like we're known for, you know, people say, oh yeah, that's a good American wrestler. That's what you remind them of. So it's really complicated. I think I could write a book on it, the differences between Mexico, Japan, and American. And even in the United States, it's different per town. You know, if you're in the Rust Belt in Southern West Virginia, that audience is going to be a little bit different than a New York City crowd. You have to understand where you're at and what makes the people tick to do your performance. It's so much deeper than most people will ever get. One perfect example is I wrestled for a company in Chicago called Warrior Wrestling. And I absolutely love Warrior Wrestling. Right now I'm their Lucha champion. And I've done a lot of this stuff. Warrior Wrestling is a show where I have to just go out there and be the best version of myself. They want to see good shit and want to see, you know what I mean? They're not going to tolerate, because these same fans, they are the ones watching, you know, every single bit of everything. They're watching Impact. They're watching AEW, WWE, Ring of Honor, New Japan, All Japan. They're watching it. So, you know, there's somebody else out there they'd rather see. You have to get in there and capture their attention and figure that out. I can't go out there and give them a Southern Tennessee style, you know, Jerry Lawler versus Bill Dundee match, because they're going to say, oh, come on, this is lazy. But that's the beauty of it. Because if I went and took this same match where I did 8 million things in Chicago and put it in Southern Tennessee, I said, what the hell is that? So you just have to be intelligent, know your surrounding, understand the people, and it gets really fun. I think that's one thing I pride myself on, is the fact that I can adapt and change it up everywhere I go.
Yeah, and I just had a question up, but I'm pretty sure you just answered it, from Motzbach asking about your experience at Warrior Wrestling last weekend. I believe you touched on all of that. But given your obsession or your fascination with world culture, does it ever seep in like the back of your mind of like how to like book maybe like a wrestling appearance based on what that culture might be into? Like, it's kind of like an ulterior motive. Like, hey, maybe if Sweden calls, I'll go to Sweden and wrestle or something like that.
Sure. Well, no, that's what I've always wanted to see the world. And I've been very lucky. I lived in the United Kingdom for 4 years, so I got to see most of Europe. I lived in Mexico for 2 years, so I saw a lot of Mexico, and living here, been to Japan 4 times. And it's something that, like, I've always tried to, I have not a deadline. I have like an idea of what I'd like to accomplish. And a lot of times I'm really big into dream it, do it. And, you know, putting something into the universe, it happens all the time, you know, but when that happens, there's gotta be, usually it's something that you don't necessarily want to switch it up completely. And maybe next be, you know, like, I can't just go out and be the Swedish chef from the Muppets. You know, that's going to be,
why not? That's a great
man.
Not with that attitude, you can't.
But this is also another thing that always gets people wild. If I went over there and I'm doing cocky American heel gimmick, talking on the microphone, and then when somebody screams at me, answering them in 2 words in Swedish language, they lose their mind. Oh my God, I can't believe he did that. You know, I think that's a big thing that helped my career in Mexico, is I learned Spanish in about 3 months, which is unheard of. I still don't know how I did that. But once I learned Spanish, it was a whole different ballgame, because I was the American wrestler that spoke Spanish. I didn't go out there and do Hurricane Ranas and all the cool stuff I can do. I'd love to have done that, but that's not what they wanted. You know, and when you kind of hit them with, you just have to stay in your own realm of what they're expecting of you and who you are, because that makes it real. A lot of times, I still think a big problem in a lot of wrestling all over is you're not buying what they're selling, because it's not necessarily genuine. You know, that's why they like to sell real people. Oh, this guy was a college athlete. This guy was an actor and you know, wherever. They like to sell real, because there's no, you're not, the curtain can't come down too far. But when you have somebody that plays a gimmick that, you know, let's say he's the police officer and he's, you know, a criminal, there's going to be some disconnect there that people can't understand. So I think the beauty of it is just, I think with wrestling, what was the territory system and all this, you know, the stuff of wrestling all over, I think that develops you into who you are. You know, over the course of the last 15 years, Sam Adonis 15 years ago is not the same person as Sam Adonis today. But like I said, the real story is now very interesting. you almost develop simultaneous timelines. You know, Sam Polinsky's going one way, Sam Adonis the other way. Eventually they meet and they become the same thing. So you almost end up becoming more entertaining, or you have more of a fascinating story than, let's say, you know, the guy that played football at Tennessee, because the wrestling business did that for me.
So I am filling in for Matt, who asks anyone who's been to Japan.
Kate, your ears must be ringing, because I was thinking this in my head. I'm like, Kate's gonna ask this question.
I have to, because of who I'm filling in for.
Brace yourself.
All right.
When Lance Hoyt was on, Lance Archer.
This isn't the question I thought you were gonna ask.
No.
Okay. One of my favorite people, by the way.
Awesome dude. He wouldn't stop talking about how great the raw horse meat was in Japan.
Yeah.
You've had the raw horse meat?
Yes, I have.
And it was good?
Absolutely delicious. It was one of those things. But again, this is a when in Rome situation. You know, I'm an animal lover. I'm here from the United States. But I think that's the beauty of the world. You know, globalization is a phenomenal idea. It's just never going to work. You can't completely switch. You can't tell somebody they can have something or can't have it based on your ideals. And I would never in a million years try to go to a butcher or go to a farmer and say, hey, I had some of that horse meat in Japan. You think you could take care of it? I would never. That's not my style. But I was in there was a restaurant about two blocks from my hotel in Kawasaki. Me and another wrestler named Joel Redman, who was Oliver Gray in NXT. We're walking down there. We walk in. It looked cool. We didn't know what was on the menu. But we're just, it looks like steak or something. We get it. And it's called horse sashimi. It was absolutely amazing. It had a lemon pepper soy sauce with it. And, you know, I'm all for trying new things. You know, it means something to somebody, or else it wouldn't be there. And again, sometimes you really, you know, living in the United States, we take things for granted. You know, some places don't have the luxuries of having any meat. You know, that one horse every 5 years might be their only chance at, you know, protein they can have. So
damn.
Who are we to judge?
Taking a huge victory on lap, because he asks that question all the time and gets so many no's. I'm filling in. I get a yes. I get a thumbs up on the horse meat. Okay, so you love wrestling. You're fascinated by culture. You threw horror movies in there. Creepy.
Absolutely.
Friday night. What are your like top 3 to 5?
Oh, I think the Spanish horror film Wreck is very good.
Ooh, okay.
Like REC. That's another thing. I'm more fascinated, and this ties back into world culture. International horror is its own thing. And it goes back into learning about cultures and whatnot. Turkey puts out my favorite horror movies. Turkish horror is next level, because imagine something like The Ring or The Grudge with this, you know, million-dollar production budget looking like $1 million. But there's actors you've never seen. It's high quality, but it's kind of like, you know, it takes it back. But the beauty of it is it's based on, you know, most Muslim faith. You know, they're not dealing with angels and demons. They're dealing with jinn, you know, and you watch one of them and you're like, oh my God, what was that? So that same horror movie, you know, leads to a 3-hour rabbit hole on Wikipedia about jinn and history and this and that. And again, when you understand it and you know what you're looking at, holy shit, that movie was incredible. You know, so
you're a less scares, more tension guy, is what I'm guessing.
You like some good scares. I like tension. I like the lot of, you know, religious horror.
Okay.
That's the stuff. Yeah, that's what I really like. Anything with demons and horror, jinns, and anything about anything that, you know, still kind of walks that line of is it real or is it isn't? You know, is it not? You know, there's no proof either way.
I see.
Yeah, my girlfriend hates those ones. Those are the ones I have to watch alone. You know, so.
That's so cool.
So you mentioned your time in Japan, and you mentioned a name that always fascinates me. I know I want to get back to the fun stuff that Kate brought up 100%, because we want to get to know you as a person as well. But you mentioned a name that I've been fascinated with for a while, Drew Nakayama. Let me ask you this: to rip off Conrad Thompson, any fun Drew Nakayama stories?
Oof, June. He was one of. I would say he was a major reason why I went to Japan. I was working in Mexico at the time with Ultimo Dragon. We had a big tour, and we had a big feud in Mexico. Anywhere Ultimo Dragon worked, I was his heel. And we just worked together all the time, which culminated at his big Arena Mexico show with 10,000 people. And what he does is really fascinating, because there's a huge Japanese demographic in Mexico. And he gets sponsorship through the Japanese companies and gets all the employees free tickets. And it's almost like Japanese Day at Arena Mexico. So clearly when there's, you know, 6,000, 7,000 Japanese employees in Arena Mexico, maybe the biggest star in Mexico isn't going to get over. So he always brought in, you know, he brought in Great Muda, Minoru Suzuki, all these guys, big stars. So either way, the big match that night was Akiyama and Ultimo Dragon and Mystico, the original Caristico, against myself, Joe Doring from Impact, and Ultimo Guerrero. So we did this, and getting in there, it was one of those things where I knew what they wanted me to do. I knew how to impress him, because a guy like that, you know, a boss, he's a boss of All Japan at the time. He knows that, you know, everybody's trying to show him their strikes, their forearms. I'm strong style. You know, they want to be seen as getting the, you know, being able to do what the Japanese do. But I know this guy grew up watching Terry Funk and Jumbo Tsuruta, you know. So giving that to them, being the most American wrestler I could be, is what ended up getting me an opportunity over there. So he took me a few times. Jun was such a class act to me. I couldn't be happier with my experience with him. It's still kind of surreal because, like I said before, I was a wrestler. You know, I had the tapes. And I always felt that the international guys were almost bigger stars than the American guys just because they were unattainable. It was almost like they're fictional characters because they're on a tape. They're not in my country. I can't come see them next Saturday night at the arena. You know, they're like, are they real? So those guys always made such a big influence on me. But he got me over there. He took care of me. I went on four tours. I was actually booked to the following tour. I was supposed to have my first singles match with Suwama, who was a Triple Crown champion. And in between the tours, Akiyama got let go as the president, and Tajiri took over, and I was collateral. So he was awesome. I had a blast with him. I have great All Japan stories. Got to meet Kobashi too, which was big for me.
It's huge. All right, so let's get back to the fun stuff for a little bit. Matsbach asks, I don't think it's a thing in Mexico, but have you ever had guinea pig in South America?
I have not. I have not had it. I am not against trying it. If I was ever somewhere that I could be to try it, I would. I've eaten a lot of bugs in Mexico. A lot of bugs. There's, you know, especially Mexico City, because I don't think people realize how far south Mexico City is. They do. You can walk down the streets and they have these crickets, or they'll have mealworms. A lot of bugs just in these big dried containers that are cooked in peanut oil. And you just put them on a tortilla and put some sauce on it. And it's somebody's dinner, you know. So I've tried it. I'm not a big fan of the bugs. Let me think. Octopus is big in Mexico. I like that a lot. Really, I think octopus is big in the United States too, right?
Yeah, I've had it here.
Really, I don't like that idea though, because octopuses are very, very intelligent, and I don't like eating them. But it was good. I had 80-year-old cheese in France.
What?
The first time I actually had horse meat was in Italy. It was horse neck salami. They used the muscles from the horse neck to make a salami. So.
Matt's going to be so excited now he gets to ask that question about people who worked in Italy and Japan.
I gotta write that down. Hold on one second. Horse neck salami. That's the name of the show.
And then there was Italy is my favorite place to visit, from, you know, not even wrestling wise, just worldwide. I mean, just the culture in general is just gorgeous. It's fun to be around. The only place I've been where you feel like you're in paradise 24/7, even if it's cold. But another good thing they had was squid ink pasta. It was like a lemon pepper pasta, but it had this, it was just black as can be. And when you eat it, your tongue stays black for about 2 hours afterwards. It was pretty wild. Pasta Nero, it was called.
You're like the George the Animal Steel of Italy after.
Right? I've had some fun in Italy, man. There was one time I got booked through a company over there called ICW, and I think they still run today. But when I lived in Europe, I was fresh out of my WWE run, or my developmental run. So I worked all over the UK, and I'm making connections and this and that. The situation comes that I'm going to Italy. And these Italian promoters, they're not too familiar with the indie scene or the American scene or whatever. All they know is Sam Adonis was WWE. That's all they know. So we land in Rome, and then we have like a two-hour drive to the little town where we're at. We pull up to the town. There's a little stop sign, one stop sign. I look on the stop sign. There's an 8.5 by 11 piece of paper with my face on it. It says Sam Adonis. Oh, whoa. That's pretty cool. Yeah. We come, drive another 5 minutes, come up to the four-way stop sign. There's four more faces with me. Sam Adonis. We get into town. I shit you not, there was 500 posters, full size, the 32 by 28, big movie style posters with my picture, my face saying WWE superstar Sam Adonis. So I'm there and part of me thinks it's the coolest damn thing ever. I'm like, how many people can say you come to a small town in Italy and you're a rock star?
Yeah.
I absolutely love that. But the other part of me was like, oh God, I'm going to have so much heat for this. I was afraid somebody's going to hear that. Who are you doing? What are you calling yourself? WWE superstar? You were nothing. Especially because it wasn't my doing. It was just through the grapevine. But, oh man, I think that might be another reason why I love Italy so much, just because they've always taken care of me quite well.
So as an NWA guy, I have to ask, what are your like old school NWA go-tos? Like, do you have three or five matches, especially like growing up?
Let's think. Yeah, I like the Flair Steamboat from Wrestle War, the third sure. one. That's probably my favorite one. I like the Rock and Roll Express against the Russians when they went an hour on TV.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. That was pretty good. There's a six-man tag from Worldwide, I think, in 86. I want to say it is Flair, Anderson, and I don't know if it was Blanchard or Windham. No, Windham was a babyface. Sting, Luger, and Windham against Flair, Anderson, and Blanchard. A six-man tag, and it was just, nope, got that wrong. Windham was a heel. It's Manny Fernandez, who was the second or third babyface. Yeah, that's one of my favorite matches. I think it's on the Flair DVD, one of the Flair DVDs.
Nice.
I love it so much. Again, I think that old, I hate calling it old school because it never stopped working. That's where my big frustration happens. It's not like, there's this and then this because of this. It's just, hey, we do this now. Okay, that might work for you. Go do that. Don't tell me this is wrong because it never stopped working. And there's a lot of stigmas. I think there's a lot of people, the one thing that people don't realize, it's so hard to be able to go and captivate an audience when they have no idea who you are. It's very hard. So a lot of these guys, whether you're on TV or not, if you take them out of that, out of that position and put them in front of 300 fans in a gymnasium and nobody knows who they are, they're lost. When their signature move doesn't get a pop, it's because they don't know the signature move. But when you lock up and back up and say, hey, he pulled my hair, the people buy it. The people that, because most wrestling fans don't live and die for wrestling like we do. Most wrestling fans, the general public that's just spending $10 that night to watch it, So sometimes when it's a little bit more dumbed down and basic, just, hey, this guy's trying to win, this guy's trying to win, what happens? Sometimes that's easier for people to understand. And it never went out of style, especially now when you sometimes see matches that, that go back like that. And when they're classic style, people rant and rave over them. Like, it's, oh my God, that was amazing. That was good old classic wrestling. And I'm like, that's what we're trying to tell you. Classic wrestling works still. Doesn't have to be tables of blood all the time.
That's such a good point too, because like, I think people say that we've like evolved, but it's like, you don't evolve past that. You're supposed to evolve with it. Right. So that's so important because it's not evolution if you're just throwing it out the window and doing something else. Evolution is being able to spice up those fundamentals that you're referring to with these things.
I think New Japan is probably the best example of professional wrestling evolving. They have some crazy stuff going on there. And I think a lot of people think you can only like one or the other, and that's bull. You can like both. I think, I see right now that the internet is so divided that you either like this or you don't. And if you don't like this, then you're a hater. And if you do like this, you're a fanboy. It's like, who cares? But there's New Japan was always good about adding the old to the new in a modern presence, and kind of keeps the fundamentals of wrestling. I just think I think the proof is the character work and the people that always end up the biggest stars are the one that do the least, Name one wrestler that literally is top of the line that does more than five or six things. None, even the Daniel Bryan and CM Punk's have their five or six moves. AJ Styles has had a million, but he doesn't do a million. Once you figure out that, they say it in wrestling, less is more, I think it's something that a lot of people, if they understood and paid attention that, why don't we do this? It almost seems like a light bulb in people's head. a lot of times you don't, that light bulb doesn't go off until you're 30, but you know, or 40 for that matter, 15 years in. But once you get it, it's kind of, you know, a whole new ball game.
Well, it looks like you're trying to actually win the match that way, which is something that I find myself appreciating more and more and more, of actually looking like you're going out there to do the objective that you set out. As a fan, it makes it so much easier to buy into. So I definitely hear that.
I personally learn more now because, again, I can't even say jaded's not the word. I've seen so much of it and I've learned as much as I can. And it's hard to teach yourself new ideologies. Sometimes it's when you talk to someone that's been in the business 50 years, you pick up something new, you know, but a lot of times, a lot of the independents, we're all kind of on the same page in a lot of ways. Sometimes I think now my best ideas come from watching other sports. You know, I watch a football game and see what made that game special. Oh, it's because of this right here. And that penalty is where it changed. Oh, so, okay, maybe instead of, you know, the roll up with the tights, maybe he catches the tights. And you can teach yourself tricks about wrestling storytelling and just the confines of the sport by watching other sports. Because at the end of the day, you know, that's what sport is. It's a, you know, a competition of two people trying to win. You know, we've come so far and we strayed so far about, you know, making it a competition of somebody trying to win and somebody lose. Now it's like the story is all that makes sense. And in that sense, it makes no sense at all.
And we're on again with Sam Adonis. Just a few more before we let you go. You've been more than generous with your time with us tonight, Sam. So we do appreciate that very much. And you brought up a decent point because newly crowned NWA champion Matt Cardona has a t-shirt that says the WWE was my developmental, and he seems to have been learning so much more on this, basically his first independent run. Do you find any similarities with that? With what you've done since has kind of maybe prepared you for a next chapter or any other chapter in your life?
Absolutely. 100%. And Matt is one of these guys that you can tell genuinely loves wrestling. And that's kind of, you know, there's always going to be 1,000 guys getting released from WWE, but very few of them are ever going to find as much success or more success than they had in WWE because they don't have that passion, which is borderline a sickness. Matt has that. Matt waited till the time was right. Matt is able, he's smart enough to see what's out there and how, and Matt is not changing for everyone. Matt's being Matt all around and just reading the room. He's being a different Matt. The Matt from GCW is not going to come to the ring at NWA because that's not the crowd. That's not what they want to see. People are going to go home and say, hey, we didn't pay to have my 6-year-old kid flipped off. But Matt's smart enough to see that. He does that. He evolves. And it's a cultural thing. He's smart. I did it with way less experience than Matt. I learned a lot in about probably a year and a half. And then I had to fend for myself with no name value. Matt's very lucky now. Not lucky because he worked his ass off. He's in a good spot because everyone knows who he is and he gets to call his own shots. I personally believe I have a ton of respect for Matt because I don't think contracts mean nearly as much as most wrestlers make them out to be. I think freedom and being you and being the performer you want to believe is there's many ways to make as much money as an independent as there is to have a contract on a, you know, on an entry level. And people don't understand that. Wrestling schools teach you that one day you could get signed. You could get signed. Hey, if you're real good, maybe you'll get signed. And that's just the beginning of the problem. How many people get signed for 2 years and then never wrestle another day in their life because they were never set up for anything other than that. In their mind, they failed. Whereas if you truly understand wrestling, understand yourself, and how to apply yourself to each wrestling company in each city or state or country, then you can figure out the way to make money for you and basically be able to survive and thrive without a contract. I think that's what Matt's doing right now. And as far as I'm concerned, I'm pretty sure there's not too many other than myself and Matt doing it that way, spreading yourself thin, you know, especially, you know, with my case, without years of TV experience.
Real quick, text from Shining Wizards, Matt, who is not able to join us tonight. So the big story kind of regarding your family, not you, but your family, is that your brother had been reported to be cleared to return to the ring. Has he expressed any interest to you, without speaking for him, any interest to you about getting back in the ring, or have you helped him try to get back into shape at all? Do you know what his?
Yes. We worked out a while. I mean, he's every once in a while he's comes to hang out with me and train with me and my girlfriend at the facility here in Pittsburgh. He's actually been cleared for a lot longer than anyone's ever, you know, known. That came out right around Royal Rumble time. So I sent him a text. I said, if I find out you're in the Rumble and you didn't tell me, I'm going to be pissed.
But I thought for sure he was going to be number 30 that got swiped away from Brock. I couldn't believe that.
Yeah, so that everybody was kind of, you know, on that same page. But it is what it is. He's so happy where he's at. He loves WWE. I hear both sides of the story. You know, on the independent, you hear some people talking great about WWE or talking terribly about WWE in their situation. But then I'll talk to my brother and he makes it sound like the best place on earth. So I'm unbiased to it. I think he's very happy where he's at. I think he would love to perform again one day. I think if the opportunity presented itself, I'm sure he'd be happy to do it. But all I'm saying is if he is going to do it one more time, I need to be in the ring with him because I would love to be able to team with him once or twice, you know, take on the Briscoes or something like that.
Oh, wow. There
would
it is.
Would you rather face or tag with him?
I would probably say tag at this point.
Sure.
Because I don't know. We've always had a professional rivalry. I think we just kind of – I don't know how well our styles would mesh at this point. I hate to say it, but in-ring-wise, you know, my career is – far surpassed his as far as, you know, not ability, but just experience. You know, he did well. He did well on the independents. He did all that stuff and he had a really good run everywhere. But then, you know, he kind of went to WWE and essentially, you know, had the situation happen. Whereas my career has just kept on running. You know, it's if we maybe had the same amount of time and could compare that, maybe that's one thing. But I definitely have an unfair advantage because I've had, you know, 5 or 6 years extra on him in the ring.
What a good brother, putting his brother over. I'd rather tag with him than embarrass him.
So let's get back to the place where you're currently featured on TV, NWA, El Rudo, just in that weird, I'm not going to say weird, but a very big six-man or four-team six-man. So let me ask you this now. Since you were, are you out 30 Gs now or what?
No, wait. No, what are you asking me?
Isn't Strictly Business? Weren't you in that like six?
We put that up to get in the tournament.
Yeah,
we didn't lose.
Okay, all right. No, I know you guys won the match, but I wasn't sure because I wasn't sure how that worked.
No, it's
people getting dumped over the ropes. People.
No. It's a team effort. All three of us work that together.
Beautiful.
So it's still yet to unfold. But that was something that kind of surprised me a little bit because Tom Latimer was one that was with me in FCW. You'd have to ask him, but I'm pretty sure Chris Adonis became Chris Adonis because of Sam Adonis and not Adrian Adonis. Only because we had a wrestling match in 2013 in Italy in front of about 3,000 people, and that was right before he was going to wherever he had to change it. So I'd like to think he stole that from me. But either way, I should just be Sam Masters on NWA, you know.
That'd be incredible.
Masters and Adonis, right? Why not?
Beautiful.
Absolutely. But I think it's just the situation they had me in with the Rude Dudes, I think we're still probably going forward with that as well. It's just a young company with so many fresh ideas, fresh faces. It's nice being in there with all the guys that I trust and respect. And it's going well. So this weekend, this Saturday, I'm in Veracruz, Mexico for AAA again.
Nice.
I have my own stable down there called La Empresa, which is basically there's three of us who started with CMLL who have basically, you know, invaded AAA. And it's like the age old adage. It's the same as WWF versus WCW in the 90s. WCW is classic wrestling, you know, the good stuff. And WWF was tables, ladders and chairs. That's kind of the AAA versus CMLL rivalry. So we come in representing the classic wrestling. And it's funny though, because I'm the American, you know, I'm not really a classic luchador anyway, but don't tell anyone that, but, it's great. It's a good feud. We're working with La Parca and his kids, against, Los Nueva Generación Dinamita. So it's on Fight TV this Saturday, Rey de Reyes. It's one of the biggest pay-per-views of the year. So if anybody wants to check that out, please do. $19.99 on Fight TV Saturday night at 7:00.
Beautiful. Sam Adonis, thank you so much at Real Sam Adonis on Twitter and Instagram. Anything else, any other plugs, anything else you have coming up that you want to let people know about, and anything that you just want to leave your fans with?
Just please stay in touch. Get on my social media, Real Sam Adonis on Instagram and Twitter. I post a ton of videos, pictures. My dates are always coming up. I'm very blessed right now because it finally feels like we're almost back to normal, if you will, after the pandemic. The dates are pretty good. I'm all over the country quite often. Yeah, and just stay in touch. You know, I'm happy to find some new companies to work for, new matches to work against. So please stay in touch, and I appreciate you guys.
Awesome.
Thank you so much for your time, and enjoy your Valentine's date with your doggo. That's what I got back here. So
thank you so much, Kate. Thanks, Kevin. You have a good night, all right?
Be well, man.
Bye, Sam.
Bye.
All right, that is Sam Adonis. And just like that, he's gone.
He is awesome.
He was the best, man. And Kate, thank you so much I tend to get too into the weeds with like the real wrestling talk, where like I kind of feel like we miss Matt a little bit, because Matt just asks like the real questions that like people want to hear, like
about shitting your pants.
Yes, and that's where I thought you were going. By the way,
I figured you thought I was going there. That I don't know how he makes that sound like a natural segue. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
He really has a gift. I don't know how he does it, but
and I was thinking
the horse
about
me. I had to get in.
Oh no, that's brilliant. And I was actually thinking about actually doing it, but in more of a polite manner. But I decided like there was
I
other.
I could have done it and pinned it on Matt. You know what I mean?
I could have easily read a fake text from Matt saying Matt wanted to know if you shit your pants.
If you've ever shit your pants.
So that was Sam Adonis. He was incredible. Kate, we're going to take a little break, ski, come back, do a little Patreon love for our people. And then we're going to be joined by our next guest, Pittsburgh independent wrestler, Jake Mercer, at around 8:30. So I'm sorry, Zeke Mercer. I think I said Jake. I'm sorry about that.
Zeke.
Zeke the plumber Mercer is going to be joining us. For any Salute Your Shorts fans out there, we're going to take a break and stop
Zeke
the video.
Zeke the Snake, I believe.
Zeke the Snake Roberts. We're going to stop the video, stop the audio, but there's not going to be any commercials yet. Actually, if you're listening to this in podcast form, there will be, because Matt and Tony are geniuses and I don't know technology. So we shall be right. Kate?
Back after this.
There you go.
We know you love shopping at Amazon, and we also know you love listening to The Shining Wizards. That's why you're hearing this commercial right now. But were you aware that you could combine the two, do all your shopping, and support the show at the same time? Well, of course you can. Instead of going to Amazon.com, go to Amazon.ShiningWizards.com and make your purchases the way you normally would. You're going to get the same great low prices, and a portion of whatever you purchase is going to go to support The Shining Wizards. How great is that? You, by purchasing anything that you normally would anyway, is going to support us. That's a win-win in my book. So from now on, when you shop at Amazon, go to Amazon.ShiningWizards.com or click the banner on our website and do all of your shopping with The Shining Wizards.
Because of the obvious threat to untold numbers of citizens, and because of the crisis which is even now developing, this radio station will remain on the air day and night. This station and hundreds of other radio and TV stations throughout this part of the country are pooling their resources through an emergency network hookup to keep you informed of all developments.
Horns up, everyone. When on the Shining Wizards Network, be sure every Friday to check out Radioactive Metal. Radioactive Metal is one of the longest running podcasts on the interweb. And every week we bring you a fist full of metal, including interviews with all your favorite artists, discuss all the metal news, and feature the best tunes on the air today. So grab a Lemmy, join your cool Uncle Snowy, and co-host Aaron in the pit.
Your recognized symbol of excellence in sports entertainment broadcasting, from the current to the way back. Join the impact player Phil Rea and the Portuguese man of war Choppy for the Turnbuckle Throwbacks Wrestling Podcast, live every week on rantemradio.com. Get all our episodes over at iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn, Audio Boom, Google Play, ShiningWizardsNetwork.com, and TurnbuckleThrowbacks.com.
Are you tired of being told what to think and believe by Hollywood elites and politicians who just don't care about you?
Tired of not getting the truth when you watch the news?
Tired of trying to figure out what pronoun to use?
Tired of mob mentality when all you want to do is think for yourself and make up your own mind?
That's where we come in. This is Justin.
And Vince.
Your hosts of Inconclusive Breakdown.
We are a weekly anti-PC podcast bringing you entertainment and current event news without any spin.
If you want to truly stay informed on what's going on in the world, then give us a listen every Sunday, anywhere you get podcasts, at least till Zuckerberg and Twitter Jack deplatform us.
And as always, we're proud members of the Shining Wizards Network.
Tired of the PC police telling you what you can and cannot say? Want a show that travels back to the 80s and 90s, where the badass hosts have beaten down cancel culture on three separate occasions and carried on to gloat about it? Since 2013, The Midnight Jury is that show. Travel back to the malls and arcades, pop in your VHS, and join us where the 80s and 90s return from the dead. Conan, tell them where to find us.
WLWstudios.com, home of the Midnight Jury podcast, hosted by Midnight Mike and Calvin Brody.
Also available on all major podcast platforms via the Shining Wizards Network, and join in the conversation on Twitter at Midnight Jury.
All right, we are back once again. Thank you, Sam Adonis, for joining us. Catch him on NWA Power. Catch him and all his other stuff down in Mexico and all the great stuff that he's been doing. Now it is time to thank a lot of other people. Kate, do you know who it's time to thank?
I think it's time to thank members of the Shining Wizards Patreon.
That's right. Thank you for supporting the show, all of you. Let's run it down. Our Patreon producers, the queen of the Shining Wizards, of course, Kathy Hummer, the king of the Shining Wizards, Manny Cutso, Danny Rusinello, and Anthony Rusinello, the AOP of the SWP. Really thought I was gonna butcher that.
Trickier than it looks.
Oh, it's awful. And Sean Toe, of course, and Sean Calejo, our two friends named Sean. And this one,
who me! Is there.
She knew it. She knew the order. She knows exactly where she is on the run sheet. Kate Hensler, of course, she's the person that you are seeing right now on deck. I see.
Watch her on Fight Club. Watch.
Do it. Follow her on Twitter.
That's right. I'm Miss Kate Fave now.
How did you do that?
How?
Didn't you change? I thought you couldn't change. I thought you could change the. Are you still? Is it the same at? No, it's at Miss Kate.
Yeah, no. You can change it.
You can change the at.
You can change the at. You can change anything.
I did not know that. I did not know that you could change the at.
It's true. You could change the at, so you can follow me at Miss Kate Fave, and then I'm Kate. Of podcasts.
And Kate of podcasts. She's everywhere. And we are lucky to have her on a Monday night, especially because she's got some big plans going on later. So we're gonna keep it going. Macarifo, no relation to myself. Matt Mellinger, Christine Friesendorf, the other half of the Sign Girls, Mark Paroloni.
Happy birthday, Mark.
All right. That's gotta end soon. Kenny Hossie, aka the Scotch Drinkmore. Jacob, big Coppa Pump of the Turnbuckle Throwback Podcast. Find them here on the Shining Wizards Network. Thomas Kopp, the Motzbach, the man of a million nicknames. I do have a plug for him. Let me find it. I'll do that after. I'll do that later on. But
are you referring to Big Tom's ROH podcast?
I am referring to Big Tom's ROH podcast.
Which he does with our own William Mercier Jr.?
Lives are going to be in their hands.
It's so true. ROH TV from this week in 2012. They're going through old ROH stuff. Rest in peace. Big ups to ROH.
You guys got to give me some more information on this. How many eps are you guys in? What's going on with that? Anyway, let's run through some of these other supporters who we love to death. Michael Hammond, Matthew Birch, Braden Bergeron. The Berg, yes. Berg. Okay, the Berg. That makes
the
sense.
Michael Jordan of this shit.
The Michael Jordan of Mattel. Is that the Michael Jordan Mattel of Mattel? The Mattel Elite Figure Collection. The Bergman, Coco B. Berg.
Yeah.
Brendan Heaney. Love the brand man. Carrie Calling. Ryan Schlong. This is just weird to say, but that's what his handle is. Asian Joe.
We love Asian Joe. He's
big
the
Asian
best.
Joe. Big Asian Joe guy.
For Asian Joe.
David Henry Bauer, I.
The third.
I will. I'm like Ron Burgundy. I will read anything that they put on here. Exactly.
David Henry Bauer III.
David Henry Bauer II. Michael Peterson, Robert Humphrey, and of course, his pal Antonio Harsaman makes experimental music at harvestmanrecords.bandcamp.com. We mentioned him earlier with his Ring of Honor podcast. Kate,
we're talking about William Mercier Jr.
I was going to let you do the honors, but thank you for sending it back to me. Lives are going to be in William Mercier's hands. You know what I mean?
I do know what you mean, Kevin.
We're about 5 minutes away from our next guest calling in.
Oh, wait.
What's that?
There's more people, even though that's usually
wait, no, wait, are we supposed to read that?
Ryan Arthur at Elementary.
Oh, my God.
Oh, wait. Say off. I can't read. Never mind. I can't read. Yeah. I'm Deke on Saved by the Bell.
So we have Zeke and we have Deke.
That's right. Do you remember Deke episode? On the old class?
When it was.
I can't read.
Good morning, Miss Bliss. It's like, what? Why aren't you laughing? And Screech is like, because it's not funny.
I know.
And no, that was a. I felt bad for Deke the Plumber on that episode.
I know that's OG stuff. But my sister and I reference that at least 3 times a year.
God, Deke, if you're gonna get the Screech, you got to go through me. And then me. And like Lisa Turtle and what was her name? Nikki? Was it Nikki? The other girl before pre Kelly and Jesse? I think it was Nikki.
I think it was Nikki.
Yeah.
And then, because Tori was on the back end.
Yeah, Tori was. That was a weird thing because like Tori came in and then they had like 2 graduations. Like Tori came in and then they had like another, like a bonus senior year with like Kelly and Jesse back.
And yeah, that's right. Oh my God. Yeah.
There were like 2 senior years. It was very, very weird, but
they jumped the shark.
And this was the episode before Slater. There was Mikey.
Oh yeah. I remember Mikey. Oh my goodness.
He was the priest Slater. He was the a priest Slater.
He was a priest Slater.
He was a priest Slater.
Kevin, you want to know? I'm so excited. We have a second guest.
Why is that?
We can ask him the pants shitting question.
Oh, this, yes, we could definitely do that. We save that for the second guest. That's the second guest question, I feel like.
That is.
Let me figure out these banners and get ours back. Yeah, that's a good little pro wrestling tease banner down there.
There you go.
Check out some shirts for the Shining Wizards.
From Data Breach University.
Kate, so while we wait for Zeke the Plumber. No, I see that's disrespectful. Zeke. No, I'm not going to call him that because seems like a very nice guy from Pittsburgh. A lot of wrestling history in Pittsburgh, so I can't wait to pick his brain about that. Amateur wrestler turned independent star, or a wrestler out of Pittsburgh. So let's get back to your. I know we have a lot of NWA to cover, possibly some MLW. Depends. We can do whatever we want. We're flushing the format, and you know what? We're not going to even do it because our guest has just entered the queue. So let's pull up his credentials and let's add him to the stream. Ladies and gentlemen, now joining us on the Shining Wizard StreamYard, all the way from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, Zeke Mercer. Zeke, how are you, sir?
I'm awake. weekend.
You're awake. Should you be sleeping? It's 8:30.
I feel like I should. It's just been a long weekend.
A long weekend.
Did you have some Super Bowl fun? Is that why we're tired today?
I did not watch the Fool's Bowl.
Oh no!
I don't really watch football that much. I'm just kind of like, if it's on, it's on. If it's not, I won't notice.
Oh my gosh! In Steelers country, you behave that way. How dare you, sir?
I prefer watching the Packers anyway. I get like skewed for that. Everyone hates that. Like,
all right. So if you're not watching the Super Bowl, Zeke, what are you watching, if anything, on a Sunday night? If not football,
either more wrestling podcasts, or some kind of content, or honestly, I'm probably just watching The Sopranos.
Nice.
Ooh, all right.
So now, are you rewatching or are you first time watching?
First time watching. I'm only 22, so I never got to see it as it came out. So I'm just like, I can binge it out.
22. I gotta go.
We're out. Zeke, it's actually past our bedtime now.
Great to talk to you.
Everyone does that. When they found out my age, they're like, screw you, Zeke. I'm like, what
do I do? What? No, dude, that's the exact same reaction I have. I'm like, it's not my fault. My parents, blame them.
Facts, just blame them. I didn't do anything. I'm just here.
Could it be less up to us? That's right.
So, all right. So Zeke is on the line at Zeke_Mercer on Twitter and the_Zeke_Mercer on Instagram. All right. So Zeke, you're from Pittsburgh. I just got to ask right off the gate. You're young. You're 22. Are you familiar in your learnings of pro wrestling, how much history there is in the Pittsburgh area for pro wrestling?
As funny as it is, like, even though I say I'm like built from Pittsburgh, I'm from Mississippi. I moved to PA like in 2013.
So this is just a big work then, isn't it?
It's just a whole big work. But people say I'm from Pittsburgh. Like, yeah, I'm from Pittsburgh. I guess technically I've lived here the longest of my life. So I was like, yeah, I'm from Pittsburgh. I'm not always familiar with Pittsburgh history. It's kind of like, if I can explain it, like I was always a mark. I was a kid watching wrestling. I got into wrestling because of video games. I didn't know about the indies until like, I was like 14 years old. Find out through CZW and then Ring of Honor. And then I found the local indie scene. And then literally after like two wrestling shows, I was like, I want to actually do this. I was 17 and then I tried out and started training. So I never like knew much of the area. I just kind of knew wrestling was everywhere, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So
like, it really feels like, it feels like an RPG half the time where I'm like playing the role of a wrestler and find lore. Like, oh, here is in this arena, this happened, and people have like show cards and pictures from that time. Or like, oh, you know where you're standing right now? This is where this happened. So I'm always just like learning stuff from there. I never will say I'm a historian of Pittsburgh wrestling, but I am much of a student. Wherever you teach me, as long as it's correct, I will like try to remember it and like write it down.
So when you decided that this is what you wanted to do, how deep did you go in with your commitment to wrestling? Was it something that you just started a little bit at first, or were you all in right away?
When I started training, I was, like I said, 17 years old. I asked my dad, because, you know, I was 17. I had to get parents' permission, he said, look, you will put as much time as you want to with this, because even though you did martial arts for years, you're doing a whole different thing now. So this is going to be, like, your thing, and your commitment to it is going to be yours. I won't hold you down to it. I'm not going to make you responsible for it, because now it's, like, it's your dream. It's what you want to do. Go chase it. That was a struggle, only because I was in my senior year of high school working a job and training at all the same time. So there were some practices I missed, but I will always try to go to practice, learn as much as I can, and just like I always feel like I was behind in my classes because I couldn't always be there, since I also didn't have a car of my own at the time.
Yeah. So that'll hurt. I mean, people that's a common story.
You know, you try to like be Mr. Independent and like, oh, I got a job. Da, da, da. But I was like, hey, Dad, can you take me to work? Or hey, Mom, can you like drop me off? Like he's just always like that. So,
huge past year for you, BWI, QWI. I feel like this whole renaissance of the indies over the past couple years has been so healthy as far as representation goes. What does it mean to have those accolades for you? And as far as the scene goes, I mean, you said you started training at 17. Like, I can't even imagine what that feels like going into an environment that's kind of known for adversity against these things. Just if whatever you're comfortable with, but how's that journey been for you so far? Do you feel like there's progress being made? Do you feel like there's progress that's being made, but maybe not as fast as it should? How's your experience been?
It's kind of like a long answer, but I'm going to try to answer it like streamlined as possible, because there's like so many facets of my answer than you have the actual answer. In my experience, I will say, I feel that even just seeing more people of color on television is a boost to me. Like it's starting to happen. You probably would know wrestlers who are Black or Asian or even queer, and they're not on TV. Like, now it's, like, because I think the indie scene is so, like, rich and just full of people that, like, I can go to work and pass by, like, two different people who have, like, an Orange Cassidy shirt on or a Malcolm Elgin shirt from old Ring of Honor somehow. It's just, like, it's becoming, I wouldn't say as big as pop culture was in the 90s, but it's like, it's relevant. Does that make sense? Like,
yes,
like,
it absolutely does.
Like, you can probably ask like two people and they're like, oh yeah, I heard, you know, Kota Ibushi. I know who Kenny Omega is, or Cody Rhodes. It's like, it's becoming like relevant.
It's cool and, again. It's coming back.
And then you got like people now that, well, now you can start referencing other people who are just not like, you know, the standard wrestler. He's like, oh, I know, like, you ever seen Lee Moriarty? I know some people who know Lee Moriarty only because of his work on Instagram and the promotional shots and his Adult Swim stunts. Like, that's, people know him from that. I know a classmate actually said to me that he knows a mass caster because he saw stuff on like TikTok of him just roasting people. And it was just like, it's becoming more and more common. Or my one cousin actually sent me a photo of Slade Kiss. Like, do you know this person? I was like, I mean, I know of them. It was like, well, this person can do like gymnastics stuff. Have you seen this? I was like, yeah, they're a wrestler. Like, what's going on? But it's just like, it's becoming like relevant. So it's good to see, like, it's not just they may know Cody, but they may know Lee or, you know, Jay Lethal, or Jonathan Gresham, because of something just popped off on Twitter or popped off on TikTok or hell, on Facebook. You know, it just made the rounds. There are more wrestling, professional wrestling featuring black wrestlers at World Star Hip Hop than I've ever seen before. And it's hilarious to me. Because the most popular one, I think, is Cedric giving like a spinal check to Candice LeRae. She pops up. Like, that has so many views on World Star Hip Hop. It's crazy. But yeah, I think it's like, it's good to see that. It gives me like hope that's like, oh, maybe people actually want diversity within wrestling of any type. So,
yeah.
What has been your, so far in your career? First of all, how long actually have you been wrestling professionally, like getting like on a consistent type basis?
Ooh, I would say, if you say like, you know, consistent is month to month, every month, then I started like at 18. I officially debuted at age 18. I had state wrestling shows or a show since I was 18.
All right, so now you're 22, so that's a good 4 years. Have you had an oh shit moment yet where like you just couldn't believe what you were doing?
The oh shit moment was my first match. We was playing some kind of up to a six man, and usually we do practice matches. You kind of like, not say go to the motion, but you start acting like you're in the match. You start behaving like you're in the match, so it just comes like second nature. And we was like, literally made our entrances and all that. And I'm in the corner waiting for a tag. And I'm like, oh shit, I'm actually doing this right now. There's fans right here. there's like camera going, the hard cams, the wrong cam. I'm like, oh, I'm actually doing this right now. And that was like my debut. That was like craziest thing. I was like, oh yeah, that's when I had an oh shit moment. I'm actually doing this. Another oh shit moment I will also say is when I went to Phil the first time and I met like a crazy amount of people I used to watch on television, and featuring even people from like Grimm's Tour Show, because I'm young enough to like grew up watching Grimm's Tour Show.
Oh, and Grimm.
Into the people who wrestle on Grimm's Tour Show.
Of course. So like,
I know you. I don't know. I forgot where, but I know you. And it's like, oh, because I watched your YouTube as a kid. Like, kid, a couple years ago.
I was going to say, come on, YouTube as a kid isn't even something. I'm just feeling older and older as this interview goes on.
When I was not an adult, I was watching people on YouTube. Because
all right, I'll take that.
Yeah. So yeah, like that was my old shit moment. Like realizing, we're like, oh fuck. Or meeting Stan Hansen, that was an old shit moment. I met him, sure, like fist bumped him. I was like, that was fucking Stan Hansen. Just... I had to, like, my friends were laughing at me. I'm like, but, like, you gotta understand, I was, like, 18. Of course I'm freaking out. I know who this guy is. I watched his, you know, New Japan stuff as a teenager. So I'm just like, the guy used to kill people. Like,
almost literally.
It just, we just make this, like, you know, it's crazy that way. So, I mean, I'm probably still gonna have more. I'm only, like, I'm not even 4 years in. It may not be officially 4 years in, but like 3 years in, I had like a couple old shit moments in my career. So
when you want to come on and do a show, and we're more than happy to have you, what do you want to get across to people of what you're trying to accomplish in wrestling when you do interviews?
What I'm trying to accomplish is mainly just have fun. I never thought I would get to do this. So I never said, like, as a kid, yeah, I'm going to grow up and, you know, go to the WWE and have and be the main event of WrestleMania and win the WWE championship. Like, nah, dude, I was short for the longest time as a kid. I never was a tall person in my class, so I'm not going to reach 6'2". I don't reach, like, 5'6 now. I'm 5'4", by the way. I'm not big. I'm not big at all. So, like, to me, just being able to do this is, like, kind of amazing. And people, I remember one time when people were telling me, like, especially my dad, he wants to, like, make sure I knew this was fiction. You can't, like, actually fight like that. I was like, yeah, I know. You're training how to fight. I'm a martial artist, too. I did MMA. I did wrestling. I know. And it was like, but when people were actually, like, showing me, like, oh, this is how it's fake. This is how it's done. I was like, wait, it's fake? Cool. I can actually probably do this then. Because it's just fun.
That's, so you say I can't really fight. I mean, you can, yeah, though.
Like, so you say I can be like one, maybe like 130 pounds and do this. All right, cool. I'll try it because I can't be 6'2". That's not happening naturally.
But did you say earlier that you were pursuing other art forms? Did you say earlier you were pursuing other art forms?
Oh yeah, like I did martial arts, like, you know, fighting. Like I did jiu-jitsu, karate, taekwondo, and amateur wrestling. Like literally before I started training to be a pro wrestler, I did amateur wrestling for about 6 years. So like I knew how to fight. It just, wrestling was always just something interesting.
Like, yeah, it's storytelling, right?
It was storytelling. Like I would say the UFC now is more like WWE how it was. But like when you was back when, like the early 2000s, if someone had like a cage fight, it was just like, you know, we're gonna announce the match, we're gonna do the weigh-in, aka the weigh-in plus press conference. We used to do it at the same time, and then you would have the fight. Like that is literally like probably 6 weeks worth of build, and not even, probably like four sometimes. And it'd be straight to a fight. There wouldn't be like no after, you know, after story moments or in story moments, none of that. It'd just be straight fight, win, whoever win, lose, draw, whatever, and move on to the next fight. With wrestling, it was kind of like, it expanded the idea of a fight to me. Yeah. It gave people, why are we fighting? Who am I fighting? Why do I not like this person? Or why do I not like the crowd? Or why do I act like a jackass? You know, it's just, it's like when you think about it, it's like all wrestling is just a contextualized fight.
Yeah.
Between two people, or two people, a group of people, or two teams. That's the way it pretty much is to me.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
No, it's my fault. So real quick. So with all these other areas of experience in terms of martial arts and amateur wrestling, is there any wrestler that you've kind of been drawn to who also has that kind of experience? Like, say, like just for the Pittsburgh tie, Kurt Angle, or just for, you know, like the martial arts, like a Bobby Lashley, or something like that. Is there anyone that you've kind of gravitated to due to your links in the martial arts fields?
When I was a kid, which means like 10 years ago, some John Punk. You definitely did have some martial arts. See some more. The technical style enough of amateur in a way. Same with Josh Woods. It's just it makes it look realistic in a sense, if that makes any sense to you. It still, like, don't get me wrong, I love things like Ospreay, and everyone's like, why don't you do like moves like Ospreay? It's like, I don't have for that. I mean, yeah, but like, I'm 54, 60, my knees like that. Like that, but like, so like, it's just a lot of inspiration, I guess. But Punk and Jaw would say, like, it drew me in.
What in your like MMA background has been the most advantageous piece of that, like translating into wrestling? Is it moveset stuff? Is it just having a built-in tolerance for pain? Like, what skills that you had on the MMA side has made the transition into wrestling easier, and what was missing for that aspect too? Like, what has become more challenging because of that, do you think? Did we lose Zeke?
See, I'm used to it being me, so I don't want to say, like, did we lose him? And then it's just like, no, Kevin, you're the asshole.
I will say, Drew.
Yeah, I think our connection is a little wonky.
It happens. No worries, bro.
Let's see if we can.
Does he want to boot him and see if he can come back in?
Yeah, let's try that. If that's all cool. Right.
So Zeke, what we're gonna do? If you can hear me, we're just gonna remove you from the stream and then just try to get back. Oh, he just did it himself. Or unless you did it. Did you do it?
I did not. I don't have that control.
All right. So that's Zeke Mercer. Give him a follow. Seems like a great kid. @Zeke_Mercer on Twitter and @_Zeke_Mercer on Instagram. Hopefully we'll get him back because he seems like such a nice young man who. Could probably, even though he's 5'4", he could probably beat my ass. So
yeah, I'm pretty sure he could beat our ass. So
yeah, guy's got MMA experience. Guy's got amateur wrestling experience.
Yeah.
So shout out to him. Hopefully we can get him back on. If not, Kate, we could talk about a whole lot of other stuff. I want to dial back to your night at we got him back, so we're not going to dial back anything. We're going to try to add Zeke back to the stream. There you are. Can you good?
I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Yes. Oh, yeah, yes. This actually looks a lot better.
I had to put my glasses on. I was like, I had to figure out what was actually going on.
Dude, I'm telling you, if it wasn't you, it would have been me that would have totally crapped with the connection. So this happens. It's occupational hazard in the pandemic era, doing Zooms and StreamYards and all this stuff. So I don't quite remember where we left off, but if you were talking about something, Kate, do you know where we...
I'd asked how your MMA experience had translated into pro wrestling and what was made easier by that. And then if there are any challenges about that too, I remember Punk saying like that sometimes when people go from MMA to wrestling because you're supposed to protect your opponent and not hurt them, that it's actually trickier. So what was made easier and was there anything that was made more difficult when you were crossing over worlds?
Learn to trust other people. That was like a big thing because we're wrestling friends. We all know how this works. You got to trust your opponent. Your opponent is like your coworker. So like, it was kind of like, you have to be comfortable letting people do a move on you, do like a stunner, do like a clothesline on you. Because, you know, in martial arts, the whole thing is meant to protect yourself. Don't let people hurt you. Don't let people get too close to you.
Wait, who are you letting doing a stunner on you?
You know, people want to try out moves. You're in training. You got like a buddy who wants to try like.
Oh, okay. You work at Austin.
You work in Owens.
You work in KO.
Like moves, man. People love like learning stuff. If you ever got to train the wrestling, you'll probably like start pulling up moves you want to do as a kid. Like, I want to DET, so you'll be taught DET. Yeah. Like people want to try stuff like that. So like, you know, you gotta learn how to take bites and go learn how to trust people. And that was kind of hard because, I'm so used to, like, protecting myself and not letting myself get close. I think I did learn, at least bringing over the barrier, is that, like, you can very much incorporate any style of fighting you fought in into wrestling. You just got to be smart about it. Like, sure, I could technically, because of my experience, jump on someone's, like, literally in front of them and just chuck them out right there. If you really want to, because I know how to do that, but like, it's not a real fight, but you can make that your finish though. You could make that your finish. You just gotta learn how to do it. You make it look cool. You can have a moment. You can have that cool GIF moment. You just wrenching that guy's head, but you gotta learn how to do it correctly. So like, it's learning how to make the fight, I guess, realistic, but not like you're trying to kill someone. So you gotta learn how to trust people. You gotta learn how to trust people. You gotta learn timing. You gotta learn spacing. The pain tolerance is transferred over. I'm used to getting like knocked out and choked out. So like, not being knocked out and choked out for real is a plus for me in my body. That's nice to know. And endurance, stamina. You need that. I came from a school in like called Can Mac. We were like best in our section. We never lost a second title. And now it's been going for like 22 years. I would say that was like close to like army training to anything else. It was such a top school. It was like everyone had their eyes on us. So it was like a constant hard program. You know, I can probably still cut like 5 pounds in a week because I know how to do that. Uh-huh. Like it was just intensity. And I think that brought over easily. And I wasn't like struggling with wrestling, such as the physical aspect of wrestling.
So, I'm sorry, Kate, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to ask you about, you just had a match 2 days ago with Troy Lords. Just wanted to ask how that was. How was that experience? Did you show Troy Lords no mercy?
I did. He put me on my neck, but I did. That's not the first time I faced Troy. The first time I faced Troy was back when I was 18, so like a couple years ago. I lost that match. I mean, yeah, I was a rookie back then.
You scouted him, though. You know now.
Yeah, but it's been some time. It's been a pandemic. You know, it's just like people change. And Lawrence is still that aggressive dude. Like, he doesn't let his looks and makeup, you know, confuse you. He will sock you in the face. He will dump you on your neck. But I did walk away with a victory that day. So I'm very proud of myself for overcoming such a barrier in my early career. So
I forgot. I didn't even think about how much of your young career has been in the pandemic. So you have kind of spent the majority of your career in this very, very weird space. Did you wrestle during any no or limited fan shows, or were you just kind of like off and then you came back around when crowds came back?
I never stopped wrestling to my detriment. I didn't like, I got to put it in context. You got to shout. I debuted in May of 2018. So I had the rest of 2018 to be, you know, in my home promotion. 2019, I was just starting to get like pacing. 2020, you know, I was starting to hit that different level. And then literally 3 months from 2020 starting, the pandemic started.
Of course. Yeah. Can't lose that momentum.
If I was driving the car, the pandemic would have been like me just laying off the clutch and middle shifting to first to second. Like it just kind of just took all the energy out. It probably almost stalled the car. You probably scared yourself shitless of what I'm supposed to do. I don't know how to continue on. But like there were a few outlets around the area, the tri-state area of like Ohio, West Virginia, PA, where they're like, hey, we're going to do like these tapings over here. Do you want to join in on these? Or hey, we're doing this over here. Do you want to do this? And yeah, so like I was like, well, I don't want to stop wrestling because in my mind I just started. So like, I took those opportunities, especially with Real Shoot Wrestling down in like Fairmont, Morgantown, West Virginia. They were a constant stream of wrestling for me. I think it was every Friday we had a live Facebook show with limited fans. Mask on, you know, the fans have a mask on, so it wasn't like too dangerous, I guess. But it was something for the fans to watch. We would have 800 views per Friday that we live streamed for, and people enjoyed it. It gave me a great outlet throughout the pandemic. I will say, eventually, I did catch COVID, eventually, ironically, at an RSW show. But still, even after that, I got over COVID, I continued wrestling. So, like, it's just, I couldn't stop. I just started. Like, I have to get my footing somewhere. I have to get some reps somewhere. And having practice matches is always not, like, the most ideal way to get reps in sometimes. Sometimes you need that live test.
Of course. Makes sense to
you. So you mentioned your home promotion. What would that be for people that are looking to follow it?
My home promotion used to be PWX/Fight Society. Yeah. When I started training, was known by PWX, old NWA East. And then when I was officially like on the roster, it was known as Fight Society. I'm not associated with the no more. Things have happened. Oh. And but like that was my home promotion. So I was trained by Quinn Magnum there at the time.
There you go.
Very nice. And did I see you have a show coming up at Wrestle Pit too?
Yeah, I saw that too on the Twitter.
I'm not on the card, but you may never know something happened by him promoting. I wanted to promote it because like it's a good Pittsburgh promotion. We don't have many. At one time, we didn't have many places to go around Pittsburgh. So like, when a new promotion pops up that's actually full of good talent that brings in a lot of eyes, you want to promote it, even if you're not on it. It's just like we all kind of we all kind of rise and ride the wave of everyone's like being successful, from a Joy to IWC to Rise to, you know, Prospect Pros. Like, if we're all putting on great shows and everyone's and the fans loving the product, we will all benefit from that. There is no point of just fighting against each other for fans. We just kind of, you put a good show here, you put a good show here, we all will be successful. So, like, I just want to promote Pittsburgh wrestling.
Yeah,
absolutely. That's awesome. And I saw Josh Woods is on that card, and you had mentioned him earlier along with some other Ring of Honor names. I am so bummed Ring of Honor shut down. You said you kind of like that sports face feel. I'm so bummed that they shut down. But do you have any opponents that, or potential opponents that you have your eye on? Anyone specific? I know Josh Woods is like pretty Josh high in demand right now. I would imagine that based on your style.
I would love to face Josh Woods. I would love to face Jay Lethal. I would also love to face Pittsburgh local, now AEW star Lee Moriarty. I love, like, he taught me so much stuff. He helped me with so much in wrestling. I was like, yeah, I want to face Lee. I don't care if I get my arm twisted off a compressor. I don't care. I want to face Lee Moriarty. I'm trying to think of more people.
Hell yeah, call them all out.
Yeah,
because you can't really, if you name people, they feel honored. And you're like, oh, you can hang. And if you don't name people, people get mad. So, like,
so you versus everyone, then we're calling
me
it right
versus
here.
Everyone. I don't care.
So you brought up a good point about promoting stuff that you might not necessarily be involved with. How have you used social media to your advantage in the independent wrestling scene, especially during the pandemic?
Social media was literally the lifeline for some companies or like around the world during the pandemic. Like, if you didn't have much of a social media presence, you may not have the same promotion or even the same notoriety you asked before the pandemic. That applied to wrestlers too. So, like, if you didn't have a great, like, social media standing or presence, you were kind of forgotten. And I'm not saying everyone needs to be the master of Twitter or Facebook or Instagram or something, but you gotta be on something where people can see you and interact with you. I still don't say I'm not, like, that well known. Maybe in my area, maybe in my town, but, like, social media is like millions of people. I have only like 475 people on my Twitter and maybe like 1,000 so friends on Facebook. I'm not in front of everybody, but I have proven that, like, if you just keep up and, like, show some personality, interact with people, share a couple memes, you know, comment some things, your presence grows. People know who the heck you are. Yeah. You crack a joke on Twitter, people retweet it and they follow you. You get named on, like, a couple lists, and people follow just because you're on that list. Like, it's insane. So, like, is social media is very important, and it definitely, like, if anyone thought beforehand, like, Facebook or Twitter didn't matter, we live in a world, like, people got contracts because they were popping on Twitter. People ran big shows because of Twitter. Like, the Young Bucks pretty much promoted everything through YouTube and Twitter. And then I left AEW. So, like, yeah, I think it's very important. It helped me kept the flow. I posted a couple funny memes, a dance and coffee memes. People loved it for a while. It was just good, fun stuff. People just love to interact with you. You make good content, people interact, you keep your presence.
Absolutely. And speaking of social media, you can follow Zeke Mercer on at Zeke _ Mercer on Twitter and the _ Zeke _ Mercer on Instagram. All right, so 2022, hopefully some of the stuff is behind us. What are your goals? What are your ambitions for this year and beyond?
For wrestling, I would say I would have to learn to balance out wrestling with real life. When I started wrestling, I was a senior in high school. Currently, I am now a senior in college. That means I have to learn to adult into the real world. I have to, find a place to live or Gotta get these student loans payments start going. You know, I just need to learn not to overwork wrestling. Because I would say before the pandemic, especially in 2018, 2019, I was wrestling like 2-3 shows a weekend. I was going everywhere just because I was a new person around the area. I need some reps. I need to get some notoriety. I need to travel. Since the pandemic, that has cut back dramatically because life is happening. all around us. So I would say for goals for wrestling, at least for wrestling itself, it's like learn how to balance that better. Not everything has to be wrestling, and wrestling's not everything, but wrestling's always there for me. And I should use it as such, like a way to escape. So I learned how to like pick places that I'm going to be at least valued at more than just like, oh, they'll just use you and move on. It's more like I'm trying to stick around and build like my name in certain areas of my area. So like, yeah, it's just more like quality over quantity, if that makes sense.
Absolutely. What was it like going to college and pursuing wrestling? My goodness.
People hate it. People call me dumb every day.
What?
They're like, why are you trying to...
Wait, in which circles? The wrestling circles or the college circles?
Sometimes both. They're like, why would you go to... Like, why would you... By the way, anyone who thinks about training for professional wrestling, it's not like it's like, oh, you pay 50, like, you know, a cool $500 and you get trained. No, my training costs $2,000. To a 17-year-old, that's a lot. That's a lot of money.
To the 30-year-old, that's a lot of money.
Yeah.
Like, that was a lot of money. Like, that's an investment. And then not only that you're going to make this investment for yourself at 17, but you're also, in a year, going to make that investment to go to college at the same time. Especially my first year of college, I didn't have a car. So I was still, like, ask people, like, hey, can you come pick me up? I'll have $20 in the gas tank. I had to find a way. Sounds like
wrestling to me.
Yeah, it's wrestling. And there's some days where, you know, I could make practice. I never missed a show, I would say that. But there's some days I could get to practice or because I couldn't afford to either drive a Lyft back home or have a way back home. And so, like, and I can't just, like, go home. I have to get back to my college because I have school Monday. Like, I can't miss that. I pay for that. So, like, it was hard. I will say that. It got easier with a car. I will say that.
Of course.
Still got to learn how to do that balance.
Well, Britt Baker got a whole-ass medical degree, so when people hate on you for it, just point to her and give them the middle finger. I think it worked out all right.
And Jim Ross says it all the time. Go to school.
Wrestling will be there. Go to school, especially when, you know, everyone's like, well, you're so young. I mean, if you just had like a part-time job and you did wrestling, you'd probably be on the way to Impact by now, or Impact, or, you know, any other promotion. I was like, but yeah, but I want my education. I don't want to just pursue wrestling, and even if wrestling goes a bust, or my, you know, like my knee shards or something, I can't wrestle or whatever.
Or just also, or not. You know what I mean? Right. Sometimes those, like, opportunities don't come, and then what? Yeah.
So, like, you know, I was just like, you need something to fall back on. And I was like, yeah, I know what I always want to do when I go to school. It's just wrestling. Was like, oh, I didn't know I can do this so early in my life. I'm going to do it now.
It was kind of a spring decision.
Like, just let's do it. So so school was always the plan in the long term. It was just wrestling. It was just like, oh, I have free time now. So just do it. Why not?
Well, yeah. You always have the Shining Wizards Wrestling Podcast to fall back on. This was a lot of fun. It's getting kind of late, but we do want to thank you for taking some time out of your night to join us. Kate, do you have anything else you want to ask Zeke before I plug his stuff one more time and then just ask if he wants to leave his fans with?
I stole this ringer of a question from another podcast, but I'm going to start asking it more. What is one thing that you're very proud of that not everybody would already know about?
Ooh.
Wait, repeat that, sorry.
What is one thing that you're very proud of that not everybody would already know about? I know. That's why I stole it from another podcast. It's a tough one to close with.
Yeah, because we're not that smart.
I mean, because if you just saw me on the street, you would never guess I was a wrestler. And if you ever saw me in the wrestling room, you'd never guess I was a college student. So I will say the fact that I'm in college trying to secure an education and get, you know, a better life to most unfortunate people and trying to better my life as a student while also chasing my dream is like a crazy accomplishment that not a lot of people even who are wrestling can do.
High five to the camera. Boom. That's awesome.
But I love that. And I love the fact that, like, I'm now, like, I guess, representation of queer people and Black wrestlers. I made that list at first at 19, and I made it at 20, and I'm, you know, 22. It's like, oh my God, this is crazy. Like, I made it again. I'm like, I don't know how you found me in this area of Pittsburgh, but But like, you know, I'm not like that relevant, but like that list kind of made me somewhat relevant. So, and a QWI. So like, it's great to be seen like, oh, you also are a representation of marginalized groups and minority groups in wrestling. So like, I will always hold that close to me. Like I actually did that while in college and still pursuing education.
As you should.
Yeah. And I'm pretty sure it's pretty safe to say that you have two new fans in Kate and I. So we will be supporting you. We will follow. We will retweet. We will do everything we can.
But Kevin, where can I follow Zeke?
Oh, well, Kate, that's very, very simple. If you're watching on all of our social media platforms, you can follow Zeke Mercer on social media at Zeke_Mercer on Twitter and the_Zeke_Mercer on Instagram. Zeke, it's been a pleasure. I can't wait to have you back on. Anytime you want to come back on, if you got something to promote, you got something to do, you got a message you want to get out there, more than welcome to come back on here. But real quick, anything you want to leave our audience with who is just getting to know Zeke for the first time or your fan base that's already established with you?
If anything, just have a message. Just like, just do what makes you happy. There is a way to do it. If you really love it, if you really just enjoy it, just find a way to do it. It will make you happy in the long run and you won't regret it. So that's me with my wrestling and education. I hope that applies to everything that you want to do or accomplish. So in the words of Nike, just do it.
There it is. There it is, Zeke. Well, thank you so much, man. Again, anytime, open door. We'll slide into the DMs later just to thank you and show our appreciation for taking some time. And we wish you nothing but the best.
No problem. Thank you, guys.
Thanks, Zeke.
All right. That is Zeke. Going to go ahead and how do I do that? Did I do it or did he do it?
You did it.
I did. Did I remove him? Sorry, Zeke. I didn't mean to do that real quick. But now Zeke, and just like that, Zeke is gone. No, that was awesome. That was awesome. I wish nothing but the best for him. Young, 22 years old.
Yeah.
Future is bright, clearly.
And, hell of a work ethic behind that person of going to college, pursuing wrestling. That's a lot.
Yeah, and that's really what it's all about. Because you're gonna need both at some point. I'm not saying you're not gonna need both, but
you're one injury away from needing both. So.
Yeah, or you're like one like bad grade away from like getting kicked out of school.
There you
like,
go.
You're oversleeping for one class away.
There it is.
Sorry, Towson University. I didn't mean to. But that was Zeke. Very, very nice person. I can't wait to hopefully have him back on at some point. See, what's great about what he does is he promotes stuff that he's not involved in.
I love that. Yeah, it made it a little tricky because I was doing my research, but
no. We're getting introduced to these talents as they're getting introduced to us.
I know, but it's smart. It's healthy. It's a healthy thing to do to promote other shows in your area. So loved that. Also, very cool merch, by the way.
He does have a pro wrestling tee store, right? I did see that.
And it's some cool show, No Mercy, because Mercer.
Oh, that's dope. I gotta check that out. Let me click the link. Cool shirts. No, because he's got the link in his Twitter profile.
Yeah.
So let me check that out. So Kate, I don't know what you want to get into. I don't know if you want to.
Do you want to talk about Atlantic City?
I do want to talk about Atlantic City. Let's pull back that AEW banner that I had on throughout Sam Adonis' interview.
Well, mostly because I don't want to bury Matt on Valentine's Day, but we do have to talk about the fact that he totally wimped out in not meeting Jay. Switchblade White.
All right. So I feel bad about burying the guys when they're not here to defend themselves.
I don't.
But let's go. Okay, that's fine. Then this is gonna be Kate's segment.
There it is. No, I don't. It's not burying. It was just like, it's like, oh, I could have. You saw somebody's, and I wasn't at the table, but I saw many reenactments. The watching somebody, like, watch the chance to shoot their shot disappear right in front of them.
Kate, was like story of my life.
Absolutely heartbreaking for him. And he was like gonna say something, but then he like double clutched, and then he thinks, I think, thought Jay White saw him, so that he didn't want to be weird.
So Jay White kind of like knew something was gonna happen. Like Jay White saw Matt, was like, oh, this guy's gonna come talk to me, isn't he?
I think, and then like saw him like. I think they did like a little bit of a dance, but it was in the casino. We're not weirdos. We didn't seek out where talent was going to be, but they happened to be at the hotel that we were at. The whole experience was really fun. We parked and we grabbed dinner. And what I loved was, like, once you were parked at the hotel, the venue is off the boardwalk. So you don't have to worry about parking. You don't have to worry about shit. You literally, like, walked out of the hotel, took a left, and you walked into the line of the venue. It was so nice how easy it was. Venue was great views wise, not the most comfortable chairs in the world, but, like, as far as full live, the
building's like 100 years old,
super old. And it was kind of cool. They had, like, we didn't explore any of them obviously because we were trying to just, like, go to the show, but they had little, like historical little artifacts. Like, I guess there was a Mr. Peanut thing, and they had, like, outfits from Boardwalk Empire and stuff, like tributes to the area. It was, like, part museum. The snack situation, artisanal popcorn. They had a Mrs. Fields.
Really?
Yeah, they had some really, the snack situation was really good, which was good because Rhiannon doesn't care about
wrestling. Would it compare to, like, your traditional mainstream venue like MSG or Prudential Center in terms of snacks?
In terms of snacks, I think better.
Very important.
In terms of, like, actual burgers and stuff, probably not, like, as good. But from an episode of AEW Dynamite standpoint, too, probably one of the best episodes that they've had. And as far as the live ones from, like, bell to bell, I think probably the strongest one. Like, I think my favorite episode, like, live experience that I've been to was probably Arthur Ashe, because it was Arthur Ashe and yeah, we saw Kenny Omega and Danielson. But from, like, top to bottom, as far as a card goes, like, the way that episode was structured was just so unbelievable.
So it was
still really, really good.
Let me ask you this, though, because the whole hype, and I'm sure you guys dissected this a lot in the Thursday night show. If you're not following them, follow them at the Mark Order Podcast on the Shining Wizards Network, available just like us anywhere you get your podcasts. So there was a lot of hype for this show via Tony Khan, via his usage of the term Forbidden Door. And that's what we do here. We talk about Forbidden Doors and talk about...
Forbidden door talk.
Yeah, then I also have, I'm also dyslexic, and I totally messed that up too. But so
that's how forbidden the door is. We're not even supposed to be talking about it.
That's right. There are supposed to the five bidden doors. No, we don't have the bell. I don't have the bell.
I
gotta get a bell. So with all the hype that this show had, with all the speculation, and no one knew. Which is great. No one knew. At least maybe you did with your connects. I didn't know with any of mine. So did you feel like it delivered with what the hype was in terms of surprises? And at any point in this show, did you think that Keith Lee and Switchblade was it? Was there any point in your night where you thought we could get something else?
So I felt like the whole, in my opinion, the whole episode was constructed around keeping you guessing until the surprise happened. And I think having it in the middle of the card was so smart. So for the first time ever on AEW Dynamite television, they set up a match. Well, just because this dorkiness has been going around. They've never done this before, where they set up a match for later in the episode in an opening segment or any segment. Like, yeah,
that's a good point.
It was pretty cool. And because there was a void there for who CM Punk's partner was going to be, people were like, oh, is Isaiah Kennedy the swerve and it's going to be Samoa Joe, and Samoa Joe and Punk are teaming up? Like, so I feel like that was done to make you question everything, right? Like, maybe it's not going to be Isaiah Kennedy where this person gets revealed, or maybe they're going to be in both matches or whatever. Samoa Joe seemed like such a natural fit for that story. So
I actually, in a text message to my buddy who's a born again wrestling fan because of AEW, no, I swear, he stopped watching pro. He was a casual,
a lapsed fan,
but he went to the one in Newark. He got floor seats. His wife gave him floor seats for the show that we were at, and we were texting. And I'm like, I mean, I don't know if I was like, I don't think I'm any better than anyone else, but I was like, CM Punk's partner is Mox. Like, it's gonna be Mox. Did that ever cross your mind ever, that it was 100% going to be Mox, or was the Samoa Joes, were the, you know, anything else crossing your mind at all?
Well, him tweeting in the middle of the show at Danhausen and at Samoa Joe, I think, was very fun.
Punk did that.
Punk did that. He was like, Samoa Joe, are you in the country? And then like, hey, Danhausen. And then later tweeted, never mind, at Danhausen. Mox seemed like a logical fit, but I think because Tony Khan sometimes likes to spill his box of surprises.
Right. You
know, no point did I feel 100% on anyone who it was going to be. There was part of me that thought maybe it was going to be Danielson in like a turn with the Mox Danielson angle that they're running about forming kind of a stable.
Punk and Danielson?
Yeah, like Punk and Danielson would have been a possibility as a way to like sow the seeds with Mox or something. Like they love to mix up stories like that. Yeah, so I thought it was a possibility, but I loved the opening segment in general. MJF coming out on the throne thing, I thought that was so much fun. But so there was that kind of like, let me throw a question mark in that. And then, you know, you saw the Switchblade trailer and you're like, well, I don't think he's coming out because they weren't going to waste the pop on the video package with Switchblade. So it's got to be someone else. And then they had Matt Hardy look Isaiah in the eye and say, I don't know who the surprise is, which made people think like
Jeff Hardy.
Did Jeff Hardy get out of his non-compete early? Once it became apparent, my guess was that it was going to be Keith Lee as the second they put Switchblade up there. And I was also thinking it might be Switchblade or Keith Lee, and maybe Tony Khan just messed up the wording of his tweet, which is what happened. And they gave us two surprises, but I was like, I think Tony Khan just got ahead of himself on Twitter and it's going to be Keith Lee kind of my thinking from the beginning.
Is it just me or has Tony Khan like aged like 10 years in a year?
Yeah.
If you look at some of those old graphics, he was like his short hair wearing suits, like, and now he looks like a, I don't want to be insulting, but he looks like he doesn't sleep.
He in like the course of 2 years has aged like when you see a president at the beginning of their term. Yeah. He's aging like a president.
So what happened with that?
I don't think he does sleep. I think he just is constantly doing shit like this.
What happened with them? Did you hear any more about the Fox Congress run? Is that happening or is that not happening?
That is not happening. I can go file that paperwork and say Kevin Garifo is running in Florida. You know what I mean?
So, you can file it for me?
I think you have to technically be a resident of Florida, but like that, well, the paperwork that got filed was not like an expensive thing to do. It was just like an AEW fan, I think, having fun with press.
So wait, so you could go to Newark, New Jersey, or wherever, or Trenton, or wherever it is in New Jersey, and you can literally submit paperwork that Kevin Garifo is running for Congress?
I think so. I think that's what happened. Like, it sounded like it was a fan who filed it for fake.
Ah, for fake.
Yeah.
That's no good. But well, wrestling is a work.
That amen to that.
So when I saw the Switchblade and Keith Lee stuff, I was like, you know, this. Well, first I'll start when I saw Switchblade. I was like, this has Adam Cole, Daniel Bryan written all over it.
Yeah, oh, for sure.
This is a surprise, but it's not the surprise. Because Keith Lee, I mean, Switchblade, whatever you want to say about the audiences, he's been ingrained in U.S. wrestling with the New Japan in California and an Impact. So it's like, all right, this is cool for AEW fans, but he's already been here. So this isn't super mega surprising. So it's going to be something else. And then even when I saw Keith Lee, as awesome as that was, and I believe me and Matt said it last week on the show that it was most likely going to be Keith Lee, I still like felt like the way it was done left me wanting more. Because what Tony Khan, I feel like, has a tendency to do is that when he doesn't hype something, it delivers. And when he does hype something, it doesn't. So I'm not saying that Keith Lee didn't deliver. It just left me wanting a bigger surprise.
Because you knew what the surprise was, kind of, I think. Like, that makes sense to me. I'll say getting to sit by Matt during that Jay White moment was so much fun. Because Jay White is his guy. Like, because the only one that had the hype who you knew who it was going to be probably was Punk. And that was just because... Yeah.
But you still didn't know, though. You still kind of, technically, you didn't know.
And, like, there's a difference between someone who got released from WWE and you're picking up 90 days later and someone who left for 7.5 years and is coming back. It had an indelible mark on a whole generation of wrestlers, wrestling fans, right? Like, that was, if they told us about it or not, that was going to be as big as it was. It was going to be 11 million views on YouTube big. I watch
it at least once a week.
I mean, I...
CM Punk's debut, I watch, like, because it gives me... His and Adam Cole's gives me chills.
It's unbelievable how... timeless that moment is. And I thought, I just because I'm a punk girl, I thought it was me. And I know people who were like, I liked punk, I didn't love punk, and I watched that like you just said, like on a weekly basis, because of what a moment in wrestling it was and how they didn't overproduce anything about it. Like, he just came out there with the microphone, they didn't say anything, those guitar chords hit and he came out. I think I am, and I said this at Fight Club too, I am over Tony Khan Mad Libs. Like, I am done with the, like, it's this, but it's not. It is a shiny green star from Impact. Like, I'm done. I'm done with that because of what you just said. Like, the surprise me thing. I know that when Sting genuinely caught us all so off guard that the network was like.
That was huge.
That was huge. But the network was like, imagine the rating we would have done if you had created some buzz around this. So part of it, I think, is TV. And part of it is like that Atlantic City show was not sold out.
Right.
So I think he might have genuinely be trying to, you know, get eyes on the product, which I can't blame the guy for. But I am ready to just be surprised in those situations instead of like or don't sell me like. The bill of goods that goes with it. Just be like, hey, there's a big debut coming up. Like, let me speculate wildly until then. Like, I don't need the like forbidden door language. I don't need any of that shit. Like, because when I saw that tweet happened when I was on air, actually, on Friday, and I was like, oh, it's probably Josh Alexander. Forbidden Door, Impact. Like, that makes sense. They said Josh Alexander's name in a promo last week. Like, it's probably that. And then of course, like, the world blew up on it, right? So I'm ready. Like you said, like those 1-2 punches are great, but like I kind of figured out who the left hook and the right jab
exactly.
So it's like you hit me with two surprises, but I kind of knew who they both were, like because I was like, well, if it is Forbidden Door, it's possible that it's Jay White. If it's not, it's Keith Lee. And then it was both of them. Very awesome. And being there live for it was incredible. And then the match that happened for Keith Lee, I just thought was so cool because Isaiah just bumped like a fucking maniac.
Yeah.
And he also just looked so good and was able to do, you know, pursue a skill set that I think WWE had really reined him in on, where you saw some really cool mat stuff. And then you just saw him absolutely fucking yeet Isaiah out of the ring. So it was just, it was really cool to see, to be there for that moment. He was massively over. He's so different than anyone that they have there right now. Like, and he just, his presence is so unbelievable because he's such a massive dude. But so lovable. Like, you cannot help but cheer for the guy. So I think he's going to be really, really special in AEW.
And I think a lot of that has to do with how loyal his fan base was that followed him well before he even got to NXT.
Truly.
Especially in this area in the Northeast and beyond, like Keith Lee is the guy that you just root for, especially when you see what happened to him at the tail end of his WWE run. He was given the world in NXT, given the world, may have taken a little longer than people would have liked, but being the only person to hold the North American Championship and the NXT World Championship at the same time. And all of a sudden, and I don't blame, I believe he lost it to Cross, right? He lost the NXT championship to Killer Cross and he had to give up one of them. I forget.
Think you're right. I think he vacated the North American title.
He vacated the North American and lost to Killer Cross. So, and just like that, Keith Lee on the main show had a great showing in that Rumble. Brock Lesnar put him over with just a simple face reaction. Just saying that's
he
a big...
He faced Reigns. He faced Roman Reigns. And like they pushed that dude initially.
Yep, and because that was the tri-branded NXT SmackDown Raw Survivor Series. And, you know, he was the last guy out to Roman Reigns. And a bigger endorsement again, I think, from Brock Lesnar is when Brock Lesnar is throwing all these people out in the Royal Rumble. Keith Lee comes out, and all you see is Brock Lesnar saying, "That's a big boy." Like, that's in his way saying, "That's a badass. That's an ass kicker. This guy is a real threat." Despite
and to
how
me, that's him saying, "This person's on my level."
Exactly. Like,
and he did it with Lashley too. You can tell when Brock Lesnar is excited to face a big meaty man slapping meat.
you're big man meat. There it is. All right, Kate. So I know we're about 9:25. I just want to run through a couple things real quick, if that's all right with you. I know you probably have some big plans. Let's go right in to the Impact Wrestling. You mentioned Impact Wrestling has been on fire. I couldn't agree more. This past week on Impact, we saw the development of a lot of storylines. A lot of them involve factions, including, speaking of Switchblade, the Bullet Club, and Violent by Design. Skating back and forth promo between the Bullet Club and Eric Young of Violent by Design. Of course, then you had the Good Brothers come out and support. What are your thoughts on both this going on and both the Honor No More and Team Impact going on at the same time, which we just learned Josh Alexander will no longer be a part of?
This is kind of like my favorite Invasion E angle. I think it has something to do with the fact that everybody from ROH, like, they have so much pride, but not that much to lose. So there's just like a very fun dynamic there. And it's just, I don't know why this one has just felt better and been done better.
I think you hit the nail on the head, despite the fact that Ring of Honor is coming back for April. None of these guys know what their spots are. So they don't know. So they don't really know. So they're either here to stay here or they're going back to nothing. So why not risk it all doing this? That's a great, great point by you.
And they just like, not that everybody there was like a pure wrestler, but like they were kind of like the last remaining sports-based feeling pillar. And like especially when NXT went away, ROH felt like the only thing left, like when we went into the 2.0 era. So like it's kind of nice because I feel like there's like an organic pride there, and it's not like a manufactured, like, well, I worked for this and I worked for this. Like, it feels like a sincere,
like we say, like, in Survivor Series, like brand supremacy.
Brand supremacy.
Brand supremacy.
Get the fuck out of here. Like, it's more than the name of the company. Like, I think there's a sincere connection to what ROH meant in the pro wrestling world. And that makes it really fun because it feels like those two promotions are kind of the most opposite. I feel like Impact, what I've loved about it is that it's a little bit more character driven and that you do have like such a variety of things happening there. Like the X Division is such a completely different thing from anything else. The knockouts are insane. Like, you get such a buffet there. And then ROH, I think, was the most specific to itself that this whole thing is just like working really well for me.
And so we had Team Impact wanted to recruit Jonathan Gresham to be on their team to replace Josh Alexander. That does not look like it's going to be the case. It looks like it's going to be Steve Macklin being their fifth guy to go up against OGK, PCO, Vincent, and Kenny.
God, what
King.
A match that was, huh? Macklin and Gresh.
That was incredible. Gresh made the save on for this past week against save Kerry Silken from getting beat up by Honor No More. So that's something that I think that's like, I think both stable feuds are working well, but it's weird for me with the Bullet Club and the Violent by Design / Good Brothers, because it's hard for me to tell who the baby faces are and who the good guys and the bad guys are. If you want to look at it like in the same spectrum as Honor No More and Impact, then I guess Good Brothers and Violent by Design are the good guys and Bullet Club are the bad guys. But I mean, these other guys have spent their entire run lately as the bad guys. So, and Bullet Club has always been historically the cool stable. So I don't know. It's very interesting. And the fact that they record in that place where they do, no disrespect, but with the crowd doesn't necessarily always react super energetically to everything that happens.
Correct.
It's tough to gauge.
And I think it's, I don't know. It doesn't feel like the most diehard of crowds either to me. Just like in general.
You're there for like 6 hours.
You're there for a really long time. It's a little confusing because it feels like the most casual one, but like, how do you have a casual Impact fan? You know what I mean? Like, yeah, I don't know what that means.
Yeah. Like, I don't know. They're not taping it like Universal where like you can like bark tickets like, hey, come see like this and get in for free. At least I don't think. I think they pay for it. And they're there for the entire run of like weeks of tapings. Like I think No Surrender on Saturday has already been taped. I believe so.
Yeah, I think they're still kind of taping ahead like that.
Yeah, it's not like a super major pay-per-view.
Yeah, I'm just like kind of a Bullet Club nerd. So, but you're right in that there's some ambiguity around the like face and heel story. And then the Good Brothers, like, it's weird to me because I feel like they fit in more with Violent by Design.
They do. They really do.
The story is a little off on that. You know what I mean? Like they kind of like left Bullet Club but are in Violent by Design, but they feel more organic. Like they should have kind of betrayed the Bullet Club in all of this, but like it's like, and, yeah, because those guys should
maybe
be
their
friends.
Maybe they will. I don't think they will, but maybe they will. But it's so weird. Like when Luke Gallows and Joe Doreen teamed up like a week or two ago, I was like, I want to see this again. Like,
hell yeah!
Like these guys are two big badass sons of bitches. I want to watch them team.
God, I love Joe Doreen. I really do.
I wanted to bring him up, and I know Sam did a little bit. I wanted to bring up his thoughts on Joe Doreen and his Impact run. Hopefully, maybe we can have him on again and talk about that. But all right, so main event. There's a lot of other stuff. A lot of stuff with the women. Mickie James and Chelsea Green fought. Tasha Steelz is obviously next in line for Mickie James. Savannah Evans, Tasha Steelz getting involved with Chelsea and Mickie. I believe they're slated for a tag match next week before they go at it. I could be wrong about that. It might actually be at No Surrender. But anyway,
I feel like Tasha Steelz has been on such a different level ever since the knockouts knockdown.
The Nacho Knockdown.
Yeah, when they had the Nacho eating competition. Ever since then,
but
I feel like I talked about it at length that how I thought that tournament just nobody lost. Like it was so well done. But I think the biggest winner in it was Tasha Steelz because I just something clicked that night that not that it wasn't there previously, but it was just showcased the best it had ever been. And I feel like she's been kind of on a somewhat meteoric rise since then. Like what Deanna's done has been so insane that you almost forget like what's coming up behind. And I think Tasha Steelz is their next one.
I agree. And this was a great, because they had two very prominent women segments on this show, both with Deanna facing Santana Garrett. And also with Tasha Steelz and the Mickie James furthering that storyline. So all things fire. And listen, I don't think there's any end in sight for Deanna Purrazzo. I think inevitably, if they want Tasha to have the belt, I have absolutely no problem with that. If they feel like elevating her while you still have Deanna Purrazzo as the top knockout, I guess that's what they call them, knockout.
Yeah.
So if you want to have them both on level playing fields and then lead to a Tasha Deanna, the dynamic between those two would be absolutely insane, even though they're both bad guys too, but still I think it could work.
I think it's so weird, we've talked about this before too, right? Like that there's some wrestlers who never need the title but could have it, like Eddie Kingston we mentioned before is the first thing that pops into mind, and then there are some people who got so over in their title runs they don't need it right now. And I kind of feel like that's where Deanna's at. Like, I think she earned her place as one of the top women's wrestlers in the world. She doesn't necessarily need it.
She also benefits from a time in wrestling where other championships are being represented on the show. So she's the Ring of Honor champion. She's the Rhea El Dorea. I probably butchered that. AAA champion. Mm-hmm. So she still has championships to add to her presentation, which she doesn't necessarily need, but it definitely doesn't hurt.
And I think the knockouts division is so strong that once she kind of went through everybody, it's not like people are going to get a tremendous rub from facing her because they're all so strong, where I feel like in, you know, Ring of Honor is completely ambiguous right now. And then in AAA, is it AAA? Triple A.
I think it's Triple A. She's the Rhea de El Rhea champion. It's got to be Triple A. It's 100% Triple A. I'm going to go out on a limb and guarantee it's Triple A.
Wow. And not CMLL?
Is it CMLL?
I don't know.
No, it's not. It's
La Reina del Rey, right?
El Rey Mysterio del Nacho Eating del Rey.
Dominic Mysterio Championship.
Dominic Mysterio Championship.
Perfect.
That's what it is.
So... those organizations benefit wildly from her exposure, and so would the opponents in those. Whereas opposed to knockouts, it's like, what are you gonna do? Lady Frost doesn't need Deanna to get over. You know what I mean? So,
I would love to see Lady Frost get over on, like, just be the next person too at some point.
My God, she's so great. She's just.
Did I ever tell you the idea that I had for when Kiera Hogan and they were Fire and Flava? Did you ever see the tweets that I was putting out?
What was it? Ice and what?
No. I was demanding that Doritos come out with a Dorito flavor called Fire and Flava, and have Kiera Hogan and Tasha Steelz be the spokesperson for the Doritos. Like, have commercials with Doritos Fire and Flava.
That is a missed opportunity.
Very much. Then once Doritos no sold me, I pitched it to Taco Bell.
Big Money Kevin now?
Taco Bell. Taco Bell at least liked and retweeted. Doritos got. I got nothing out of Doritos.
Taco Bell knows the value of wrestling. They got Alex Zane.
That's right, big Alex Zane.
They know what's up.
Big Alex Zane. All right. I didn't mean to cut you off. Go ahead.
You're fine. I was just saying that there's so much that goes into why someone should have a belt, right? And the knockouts have this champagne problem of all of their women have the ability to be over, and so many of them are over. Like Tasha Steelz, I think, is on the rise, where her having the title would be something that would be so helpful to her.
It would
make her a star. Yeah.
Tremendously helpful. I agree 100%.
And I don't think Deanna needs it, which is great. It's a testament to the run that she did have.
Yes, 100%. And speaking of knockouts, former digital media champion Jordynne Grace, I believe, is getting a rematch with the current digital media world champion Matt Cardona at No Surrender. I believe they announced that, or at least they hyped it on Impact. Cardona, and we could segue after. I want to talk about real quick. I'll get back to Cardona. Brian Myers versus William Morrissey, hardcore match. Brian Myers in his element as a ECW super fan. He got his ass kicked, and he took it like a champ. And that was a tremendous hardcore match between William Morrissey and the Prince of Queens, Brian Myers, the most professional wrestler. Did you see this match, Kate?
I did not see this match.
It's okay.
But I just appreciate what a fucking mark you are.
I am. Listen, I'm a freak. I'm a mark. All right. Listen.
And
you talked about how Matt missed the opportunity. I literally have to talk to Switchblade. We didn't talk enough about that, by the way. But I was literally in a locker room with Broski for 4 hours, and I didn't say a word to him.
My God.
Person. And I know, and I'm not like that with a lot of people. I talked to Eddie Edwards. I talk to Eddie Edwards every single time I see him.
I just think it's so funny that you've had people that would literally be considered legends on the podcast that we're talking on right now. Yes. And Matt Cardona, you can't even muster up.
I've known Brian Myers for almost 10 years, and it still freaks me out to talk to him in person. I could text him right now if I wanted to, but in person, it's freaking weird.
I mean this sincerely. It warms my little Marky heart when I see
it's the only two people.
You are. The
only two people on the planet that, in general, I'll get nervous, but I'll end up sucking it up and doing it. But for some reason, unless I'm hammered, I forgot that I talked to TJ Wilson in Orlando. I didn't even bring this up to Matt and Tony because I totally forgot about it because I was blasted and 2.0. They said that they would do the podcast. I totally forgot about that too. And but for some reason I won't do the meet and greet to take a picture with Brian and Matt. It's a problem, Kate.
Like, Brian's even more so because you, like, have worked on, you've worked shows that he's at all the time. Like, that's the one that gets me even more. Is because it's disgusting. It's, like, it's not just like, oh, we've crossed paths before. Like, very regularly do you cross He's text kind of like a mini co-worker.
Text at least once a week. Text at least once a week. Can't talk to him in person. It's a sickness.
It's hysterical.
It's disgusting.
I love it so much.
I'm ashamed of myself.
Punk replied to me once, and I was like, we're best friends.
I would have saved that and made it my screensaver and my and my cover photo and my profile picture and my avatar and everything. All right. Speaking of broski.
Hell yeah. I love this move. I actually really, really love this move.
NWA. We talked a lot about NWA with Sam Adonis. But this, I think, the only headline. I watched Power. I did not watch the USA show. But I feel like the only headline that we can discuss right now, being that it is 9:41, is we have a new NWA World Heavyweight Champion. And his name is Matt Cardona. I saw this coming. Not to toot my own horn like Arn Anderson, but toot, toot. Saw it coming just like I saw Trevor Murdoch winning the NWA championship before him. Kate, let's deep dive into your thoughts on Broski winning the NWA championship.
I think this is a no-brainer move. I think it was so smart. I think NWA needed it. I think it's very fun to, because, like, I'm not, like, the biggest fan of Cardona in the ring, but that thing that Sam Adonis was talking about before of seeing somebody assimilate to every environment they're in, yeah. I don't think you can deny that what Cardona has done, as far as that goes, has just been, like, on the legendary level of sorts. Like, it is crazy to think that this is the same guy who is getting carved open with a pizza cutter and beers chucked at his head at JCW, going into a studio show and doing what he did there. And I have so much... I think there's so much value in what they did in putting the title on him, because I think NWA really, really needed it. And I think that Cardona right now has built up so much equity that it's going to do really big things for their promotion. And it also gives Cardona, like he's on Impact, but it doesn't feel like a home in some ways. I feel like Cardona being an NWA champion, like, almost sets down these really nice roots where now every time he branches out from that, like, he has this like, nutritional place to go almost, if that makes sense. Like,
no, it does.
It's a value for him too, to be able to bring this belt to other places, put it in those other environments, but to have a show where it's like, I'm ripping a promo and I'm kicking someone's ass for the run that he's on right now. It's so advantageous for both parties that I felt like it was such a no-brainer move. Not one that I was sure they were going to pull the trigger on, but one that I'm really, really glad they did, because I think it makes a world of sense for everyone involved.
Yes, and to your point about it took him a little while longer in Impact to embrace his heel persona, and that's probably a decision that wasn't up to him, but now he is, because, you know, he cheated to beat Jordan Grace for the digital media championship. So he's now slowly but surely bringing this persona to every company that he's in, still kind of like, and he'll do it on Twitter. Like, I'm still a baby face. You guys are booing. That's it's your decision to boo me. Like, that's your guy's problem, not mine.
It was like Danielson coming out of the face tunnel. Like, I love it when, like, the key to a great bad guy is they don't acknowledge they're a bad guy. Right. Like, MJF's doing it super well. So, like, I think there were a lot of people that, like, if you come out and you give the I have a chip on my shoulder attitude after you get let go from WWE, there's a desire to, I think, by a lot of wrestling fans, to want to see you do something completely different than you were doing. And when he initially went to Impact and when he did those couple of AEW appearances, I think a lot of people were like, He looked diesel, like, he looked jacked, but I think a lot of people didn't feel like it was like a huge shift away from, I mean, a huge shift away from Broski, sure, but like a huge shift away from Zack Ryder, maybe not enough. And then through the GCW builds, I think people were like, that's what I wanted to see. And I think that's a very difficult thing to, you can't just suddenly shed everything you knew and were used to at a place that you were for 10, 15 years or however long it was there. So, like, I'm so happy for him. Like, even though I feel like ring wise, not my favorite, but to see what he's done character wise has been incredible. And I hope independent wrestlers are taking notes, because it's like that thing Sam Adonis said about, like, you don't need a contract to be successful in pro wrestling and like do it for the reasons that you love to do it. Like, if you're trying to get a job at AEW, I get it, but like, AEW didn't exist when you became a wrestling fan, right?
Right.
So I think that's just like a really important thing. And like, to see Cardona, who I know already had a name, but like build more success after his WWE run than he ever had there is something that's like awesome and inspirational.
Yeah. And I don't know this to be a fact. I think a lot of it is specifically maybe to his GCW run. I feel like part of that maybe is why he brought Hawkins into it. I know you had the X-Pac thing like coming out, so you're gonna have Janela and X-Pac first.
Oh, that was such an ECW tribute.
Yeah, no, of course.
Yeah,
of course, 100%. But I feel like I'm not gonna get inside his head, because I don't want to disrespect him by saying this, but if he does tag matches with Brian, the work rate in the match goes up. Like,
sure.
Like,
he's tenfold. The most professional wrestler. Yeah.
Yeah. So like,
and Janela's not like the technical Adonis on the other side of the coin in that situation either. Yeah,
yeah, exactly. So again, I'm not disrespecting anybody involved, because I love Joey. I love Mock. I love Broski. Yeah. So I think them being together as a team is invaluable, especially in GCW. And I believe they are going to be wrestling the Hardys in big time wrestling coming up soon. A couple other NWA notes real quick. We talked about this. I'm not 100% sure what's going on in these matches, but we talked about these like three, like 14, like, I know it's like some sort of cup for like, it's not the Crockett Cup, but it's like some sort of competition for like the winner gets like 30 grand or something like that. The End and Rodney Mack shut out a team and ran the distance against Aaron Stevens, Derek Kratos, Judas, James Mitchell, Insomnia, Idolmania sports management. I thought it was Insomnia. It might as well be Insomnia when Austin Idol's on my TV. Austin Idol, Black G's. So a lot of stuff. Camille had a match with Kira Hogan. Lots of build up to their shows coming up. Obviously, this was pre Power Trip, so Power Trip happened after, which we just covered right there. Kate, to do this real quick, very bare minimum, MLW, because I did watch MLW. Richard Holiday finally pulled the trigger, turned on Alexander Hammerstone. So there's that. I watched the Contra Unit explode. That's really all I got for MLW. The guy, Curon, called out Jacob Fatu. Really good vignette on Jacob Fatu. Go back and watch that if you haven't, on MLW. His life story growing up in an impoverished neighborhood and watching people die in front of him in real life. Kind of crazy, kind of sad, but it is what it is. It was building him up as the real deal monster. Don't know what's going on with Contra. So there's that.
EJ, here's what I learned this week. All right.
Okay, this go for it, kid.
This is my one MLW highlight.
Smart me up.
Okay. Everybody who was in Dynasty makes out with girls the same way. That's what I learned this week. Oh, MJF devoured one of the goddess's faces on television.
You know,
that's his shoot girlfriend. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Right. Okay. She's a very skilled artist. Since we're pulling back the curtain, she's an incredible artist. And then Richard Holiday devoured Alicia Toot's face.
Ah, got all the a toot.
Got all that.
What's that a toot? Oh my god. Hold on.
It's so Canadian sounding of you.
Yeah, it's the attitudes era. Attitude era.
I gotta go.
All right, we're done.
Like, this is like a pay-per-view with a hard blackout once you say attitude era.
Attitude era is a great pun.
That's a t-shirt. You should tweet that at her.
I will tweet it at her, because she's showed some attitudes. I can't be the first one that thought of that. She's a smart girl. She probably already thought of that.
She is.
Yes. All right, so that was our very, very in-depth MLW coverage. I did watch it, though.
I literally cut you off. You can continue.
No, it's okay.
That was the one thing I knew about MLW this week.
I feel weird doing it without Matt or Tony here, because I can't do it justice, because I did watch it, but I just don't. I mean, Richard Holiday fought King Mortez, EJ and Juka, I think his name is, fought the guy that was kicked out of Contra, or then he challenged somebody else, and Jacob Fatu came out, beat his ass. Nice little promo in the beginning from the head guy saying that Dallas is not Mexico. Dallas is all talk and a lot of bullshit. But
and
anyway.
Talk about forbidden doors.
And, yes, the five bidden doors. Five bidden doors. Four bidden doors. Three bidden doors. Two bidden doors.
And a forbidden door.
And a forbidden door.
Killed
Kate,
it.
Plug whatever you have coming up.
We didn't really week. Have to go home. I was just making
sure. Listen, it's not. It's almost 10 o'clock Eastern Standard Time, so I'm okay with going home.
Do you want to real quick talk about this news that just broke on Fightful Select that WWE is making overtures towards Stone Cold Steve Austin for a WrestleMania match?
I will talk about that. I do not follow all the backstage newsies. So I don't know. So fill me in. What happened? Oh, wait. WWE is reaching out to Stone Cold Steve Austin for one more match. That was the news.
That's it. It doesn't say. This is.
A story of a girl. Crowd of ever and drown the whole world.
I hope it's not for. It says for a match. But like, I don't know who you'd have him face right now.
Oh, who is it? It's got to be. They can't. They can't. Like, finally give us Austin Goldberg when they're both, like, 60, can they?
No, they would do that in Saudi Arabia if they were going to do
yeah.
that.
I was just going to say, is this for Saudi or is this for... Who do they want him to work? I just saw it. Oh, Kevin Owens?
Oh, my God. That would be awesome.
If
that Austin, would be red.
If Austin is Austin. But it can't be Austin.
Yeah, I don't know. It's not in the article that there wasn't any, like, lead... That there was no information about whether Stone Cold had an interest. I feel like Stone Cold and Punk would have been the money there.
Yeah.
I don't know if Stone Cold comes out of retirement for.
Who are the top like? All right, so who are the top guys in WWE? Because we do have Saudi Arabia, you know, Blood Money Elimination Chamber coming up Saturday.
There, I mean, it's Brock Lesnar.
Lashley.
It's Lashley, kind of. It's Roman Reigns. It's not Big E. They made that very clear.
Yeah, that's a disaster.
I mean, kind of Seth Rollins and Owens.
I remember saying that I wasn't shocked about the Big E thing because I remember you and I having a heated debate on the last time you joined us on the show, was that if they never thought he was the guy, then the right move was to take the belt off him. Clearly, they don't think he's the guy. And I don't think they think Bobby Lashley is the guy going into WrestleMania season.
The whole way they gave him the title made him look like a jackass.
Yeah.
And it was done to advance the other storyline.
Yeah.
Like they clearly just don't care.
So we will have our picks. We're not picking No Surrender, but me, Tony, and Matt will be picking the Chamber. And there's no doubt in my mind. And I'll tip my hand right now to them. They don't care. Brock Lesnar is walking out with the championship.
Right, and because Paul Heyman did a whole thing about how it's not going to be title for title, which means that it is going to be title for title.
Yeah.
And that Brock's going to win.
Hey, Buster.
Buster!
Buster, what it is right now. We'll be picking that. We'll have our results for that pick, for those picks next week on the show. Stone Cold potentially coming back. Who knows?
To the show. Which is exciting. So tune in next week as Stone Cold Steve Austin.
That's right.
Joins the Shining Wizards. Shining
Wizards will be joined by Stone Cold Steve Austin next
Remember
week.
When, you know how Tony would get those amazing liners from Totally Alive people? Like when he would go on cruises and it would be like, hey, this is the Macho Man Randy Savage and you're listening to the Shining Wizards podcast. Yeah. You should do that to promote shows now. Just be like, Stone Cold is joining us.
Hey, this is the Loose Cannon, Brian Pillman. And you're listening to the Shining Wizards podcast.
Yes, they were completely real. It was usually like when he would go on one of his, like on a cruise or something, he'd run into all these.
They were actually really funny.
They were the best.
Yeah.
You should do that to promote the show, though. Just like,
just
Stone Cold's on next week.
And just lie to people.
Just lie, yeah.
Just lie. That's ethical.
There you go. Yeah, that's fair. If you do it about people that literally can't be on it, why not?
Just be like, hey, this is a mighty Hercules. one half of Power and Glory, and you're listening to the Shining Wizards podcast.
My favorites were when it would be women that sounded remarkably like Tony. That was just like the fun. Like, this is Paige, and yeah, you're listening to the Shining Wizards podcast.
Ah, this is WWE Hall of Famer Trish Stratus. What's this all about? A toot. And you're listening to the Shining Wizards podcast. Hey, this
is Mae Young. This is WWE Hall of Famer Mae Young, and you're listening to the Shining Wizards Wrestling Podcast, where it's forbidden doors and talk about doors.
That's it.
I'm looking at a big tote or big U-bin container and a tote of action figures that I did not pack up myself. So I'm it's really giving me like OCD at how they're stacked in this like Tupperware container. Like, I see like a loose Shelton Benjamin and a loose Hawkins, but I also see like an AEW figure that I don't know who it is. They're all stacked abnormally, and I have no idea how I've lasted 3 hours and not noticed it.
There's a lot of people who don't know how you lasted 3 hours.
Hey, I had a great time, Kate. Oh God, stop it. First of all, if I'm lasting 3 hours, we got other problems.
You used Blue Chew. You used one of the many, many, many promo codes that you can use in this wonderful industry.
I'm a hoarder of Blue Chew promo codes.
I'll be damned if I'm paying for more than shipping.
Those aren't action figures stacked in there. Those are all promo codes for you two for Blue Chew.
I know it up in there.
Tony's
in the chat telling us to go to bed. I don't know, Tony.
Oh,
kind of hard to sleep when my back hurts from carrying the show because you bailed.
Whoa, carrying the, that's like a direct shot at me.
No, it was an indirect shot at Tony. I was just having fun.
All right.
This was a lot of fun.
This was a blast.
Thank you, Kevin.
We should pull it into the station. Kate, drop all the promos, all the podcasts you're on, all the shows that you're on, all your Twitter handles and new Twitter handles and old Twitter handles and everything.
I'm going to not drop my old ones, but I will promote. I am on the NXT 2.0 post show tomorrow, Sour Graps, on Fightful YouTube. Join us as me and Alex Pulaski lose our fucking minds at how bad that show is. Wednesdays on the Mark Order podcast, talking all things, all elite. Also, Tuesdays, Fightful Overbooked. I'm doing a counterpoint show with Joel Pearl called Here's Why You're Wrong.
Wait, I got heat with you about this.
All right, well, let me get through my plugs and we'll talk.
Okay, okay.
And then this Thursday, I'm on the 6M podcast with Doc Mueller from Bleacher Report and Tom over there. And then Friday, I have the AEW Rampage and SmackDown post show with Sean Ross Sapp, Fightful YouTube, way too late at night, though. Yeah. I think it's at 7 o'clock. I think Rampage is 7 o'clock this week.
Oh, because of the something.
I don't know, but I got to start an hour earlier, and I'm fucking excited.
I think it's an NBA game, I think.
And I also want to say goodnight, Gracie.
Oh, God. See, I did. All right, so I respected you for getting the horse meat question in. this counterpoint show, was this your idea, or was this idea brought to you?
A little bit of both.
All right, because I remember pitching you an idea that I never followed up on, which is the story of my life. About doing like a first take type show. And I feel like you just took this idea and ran to someone else.
I didn't. Well, so Joel is like remarkably positive about things, which is nice.
That's good.
But it's a little different because it's like last week we did NXT versus NXT 2.0. This week it's like Hook versus Tony D'Angelo. Like, it's a lot of more timeless ones.
Oh,
like
God.
News debates. The next one we're going to do, I roped them into ECW versus WWECW, but it's more timeless stuff than like current topics, which is kind of fun.
How far ahead do you know which side you have to debate?
Last time we did it kind of on the spot, but we recorded like three in advance.
So now is it just like you have to like fight for the one side?
Yeah. But it like also just devolves because we just keep cutting each other off and being like, here's why you're wrong. So we're just picking on each other's points mostly. And that can go from anywhere from like Hook uses judo stuff extremely well in pro wrestling to like, yeah, but have you seen his hair? So it's okay. Very like,
gotcha.
Very tongue in cheek, very lighthearted, but Fightful Overbook has like 900 hours of programming head over there. But that's the latest venture. And then I have more stuff coming up, including something that's going to be on the Shining Wizards Network that I just have to get my ass in gear about.
Uh-oh. I don't see. You got to DM me about that because I got to be in the know about this sort of stuff, Kate.
We'll talk off air.
All right. Well, Kate, thank you very much, guys. Follow us at the Wizards Podcast on all social media, Instagram, Twitter. Go to our pro wrestling tee store. Just search Shining Wizards. You'll find it. We'll be back next week with another, as Tony and Matt would say, rip-roaring episode of the Shining Wizards Podcast. Thanks to our guest, Sam Adonis, Zeke Mercer, and of course, KTG, Kate the Great. Happy Valentine's Day, everybody. And she already said goodbye, Gracie, so I'm not going to do it.
Good night, Gracie.
Have a wonderful night. We are out, and cue post music. Bye. All right, we're out on the broadcast. Oh, I can't say that one. We're actually still on the broadcast. All right, now we're out.